JSR2 committee. Apologize to the audience, we're having a little trouble getting organized this morning, but we're going to start off with an overview from staff. We're waiting for Jeanette from home, and I thought I'd start coming right. Would you like to come up to the mic, and I'm going to have you to start off with it in case we have questions. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What you have before you is a binder that was put together by the Natural Resources Work Group. And what we will do is we'll certainly be working off the dash twos as is posted. And we'll start out with the legislative findings, section 17 in the dash twos. And then we will also then look at section 6 of in the binder behind the legislation. And we'll point out that it's not a legislative council draft. But in section 6 of the proposal is where you will find a different alternative legislative declaration. So we'll start out with the dash 2 amendments, section 17.
How does that relate to this?
Okay. So if you will look at the dash 2 amendments, page 14 is where you will find stated the Legislative Assembly findings. That is your opportunity to state your purposes here. I don't know if you want me to go ahead and read through there, but I will point out on page 15, you'll see in addition to current law, beginning on line 11.
Mr. Chair, I'm lost. So can I ask Judy's indulgence? Or, I just got my dash shoes out of this.
Okay.
I just realized I've loaned mine out. So.
We will get you another dash shoe.
That's how that works.
Yeah. All right.
So let's back up. Does everyone except Justin Thompson, we will get a dash two amendment for him. Okay, we've got someone going to get that for you, Representative Thompson. And everyone else?
So we're comparing page 15 of dash two. And Judith, where are we in the booklet?
Okay, in the booklet, if you will open up your booklet to under the legislation tab, you will find what looks like a legislative council draft, and it is not. But if you look under section 6, and that is page on page 4, there is an alternative Legislative Assembly declaration that is being proposed by the work group. So what I would ask you to do is first look at the dash twos, the dash two amendments, page 15. And you will find on there the additional legislative findings that were proposed to be added to current law. And if you'll just review lines 11 through 23 to refresh your memory on what we're the concepts we're trying to add as a legislative statement.
We're on page 15, line 11.
Correct.
Through 23. Okay.
And so the discussion will center around not only that additional language, but the entire section, including the rest of the legislative findings that is indeed in current law. And we will be comparing that and choosing language depending on whether you want to stay with what's in the dash twos or go ahead and look at in the binder on page 4 behind the legislation tab is what's being considered as an alternate legislative declaration of purpose.
It's section 6.
Section 6 on page 4 of the proposal. I will refer to what's in the binder as the proposal, and we will refer to the other original legislation as the dash 2s.
It's kind of hard to go look at what we're covering, see what's there, and then at the same time hear what we're going to be comparing with. So I wasn't able to get the latter part. So I know we're covering 815, 911, that section, but I wasn't able to follow then what's going to be relating to in the proposal. Where am I looking for that?
Let's back up. Step back and take a deep breath here. I think this is going to get too confusing.
Yeah.
I think what we better do is we've had work groups on their own that have been out working on this and their amendments. And I think what we ought to do is have them come forward and present to us what work they've done. And I think they made some recent changes maybe. And that's what this meeting is for today, is to hear from all the groups, not just the group of natural resource people that have been working. And then, in the meantime, I think we've got staff that's going to compile it on a side-by-side sheet. At least we talked about that last meeting, I believe. Well, we can compare them with that. This is not going to work. I don't believe this shifting back and forth. So, the other thing I want to say is that I was looking at the sign-up sheets. It looked to me like basically the same people are signing up for each one of the sections. So what I would like to do today is, this is a hearing on House Bill 3225. Those of you testified, I think it's going to work better if I just let you go through and testify on each one of the sections rather than keep switching back and forth throughout the hearing. So with that, Jeanette, did you have anything more you'd like to add before we open this up?
Mr. Chair, no. I you don't have audio in my office, so I'm going to sit over there and work while you're working.
Sure. I was just going to say, don't go too far away. Actually, Ted told you to take the rest of the day off, but I overrode him. I had to leave the room. First, I'd like to call Roy Hemingway.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Roy Hemingway of the governor's office. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. Let me go through the sections that you are having testimony on today one by one. First, in I believe it's section 1, 1 through 7, creating the Oregon Natural Resources Office and defining its duties. As we understand the proposal, it would create in statute the existing Governor's Natural Resource Office. While we can support this concept, we also think that the way things are now is also acceptable. We believe that Section 1 as printed is fine. Section 7 has some references in 3B on page 4 of the Dash 2 Amendment that make reference to the Pacific Fisheries Management Council and the Restoration and Enhancement Board as being included in the ONRO. The Pacific Fisheries Management Council is a regional body appointed by the Secretary of Commerce with suggested nominations from the from the governor. The Department of Fish and Wildlife staff works for the department member who is a member of the council, but otherwise the state nexus is not very strong. And so it's probably it is inappropriate, we think, to have the Pacific Fisheries Management Council being the ONRO. Similarly, the Restoration Enhancement Board is a function of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we believe should remain. Going on in Section 7,
I read that as saying that the Natural Resources Office was going to be the liaison with CFMC.
Senator Duke, if that's the intention, we wouldn't have any objection to that.
Because it acts as a liaison between the executive branch and the assembly and the rest of these folks. So, you didn't read it wrong, but that was how I saw it, and
The department is probably the most appropriate. We could probably live with that if we had to. We think it'd be the most appropriate and has that function right now.
Some of us might like to think that there was an overarching.
We could live with that. Moving on in section 7, subsection 3D. There's reference there to interagency agreements. First of all, there's requirement that the ONRO have responsibility to coordinate development and review all interagency agreements, even those that don't have anything to do with natural resources. And clearly that's an inappropriate function of a natural resources office. But with respect to those that have something to do with natural resources, we feel that many times those functions are simply between the agencies and they work them out on an informal basis when they rise to the level of dealing with state policy. We do have a role in them, but it's on an informal basis. And taking that role on in a formal way would add to our staff load, our workload unnecessarily, and so we believe that language in line 16 through 19 should be deleted. Going on, covering the highlights here with respect to on page 5 of subsection 4 of section 7, there's language with respect to providing staffing to the Restoration and Enhancement Board. The R&E Board is a function, again, of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we think it should remain so. We assume that the current staffing associated with GWEB, the National Heritage Advisory Council, and the GIS Service Center would be moved to ONRO if those functions are moved to the ONRO. We don't want to get the responsibility without the ability to carry out those responsibilities. As you're aware, the Healthy Teams Partnership doesn't have staffing right now, and we have proposed in the governor's budget for having a Healthy Teams Partnership coordinator. If we get the responsibility to staff the Healthy Teams Partnership, we hope we get the budget to do so as well. With respect to the IMST, we do provide clerical staffing to them right now. We don't provide any additional staffing in the way of scientific assistance. They generally are able to get that through their own budget. Moving on, Mr. Chairman, to Section 8. We support this section, but with a few suggested edits. The question of whether this office should be administered and the fund should be administered by BAS is one we'd like to comment on. We feel that the GWEB funds have been administered through the Water Resources Department in a very efficient manner, with very little overhead. People have been able to get their checks in a very short turnaround when needed. And we're not sure what purpose moving it into DAS would serve. So I think everyone's very satisfied with the Water Resources Department right now.
Excuse me, Roy, Elementor 66 very clearly stated that we had to have this funds go to a state agency. So you're suggesting that all of those funds remain with Water Resources?
Mr. Chairman, clearly there are multiple functions that are served by the Measure 66 fund. So one agency has to get this money and then distribute it out. We have felt that Water Resources, because of their history of doing this with the GWED funds, with the appropriate agency, and that's what we put into our suggestion. Any other agency could be picked, of course, including DAS, but we felt that Water Resources Department had the most experience.
My understanding of the ballot measure was the very first agency that touches this money, the legislature has no expenditure limitation ability on that agency. And that's why I tended to lean toward, from the beginning, giving it to the first agency would be a pass-through. And I think that's why when someone suggested that, it made sense to me. And then it would go to the agencies that would actually be expected to do the work with it. Does that change how you look at it?
Senator Dukes, that is my understanding on how it would work. So it isn't the agency that would have no limitation. It would be the fund that the agency would have no limitation with respect to the fund other than the amount in the fund. Clearly, the agency would have limitations with respect to its other funds. And that it would be a pass-through, that's correct. And so, whatever agency it is, it's going to be passing this money out to many different functions.
It just seemed to me, and granted, we will come at this from different perspectives, but it seemed to me easier to keep both of our different perspectives happy if it passed through an agency like GAS and then went to Water Resources, ODFW, wherever the heck it goes after that, and we all had the opportunity to discuss how it would be spent there. If it goes directly to Water Resources and we do not have the ability to put an expenditure limitation on it, it seems to me we have the potential for more heated discussions as to what ought to be done with it.
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, if Louise Soliday could comment on this question, she's handled budget matters with respect.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dukes, Louise Soliday with the Governor's Natural Resource Office. If you look at Section 8, there are, in Section 1, it identifies DAS as the agency to administer the entire Parks and Natural Resources Fund. That fund then gets further split 50% into a park sub-account and 50% into a restoration and protection sub-account. The restoration and protection sub-account is found on page 5 at the bottom of page 6. It also says that DAS is going to administer that sub-account. What we're suggesting is that it is more appropriate that the Water Resources Department administer that particular sub-account because it is directly related to the restoration and protection activities under Measure 66.
Like the parks would be administering their sub-account, that makes sense.
Correct.
Mr. Chair, just to carry up on what Senator Bruce is talking about, how do we deal with the federal funding coming into us with the requiring a matching of federal restoration funds? Will that also be a DOS or DAS issue? Or would it go to Jim?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tarnow, as we have proposed it to Congress, those funds would come in to the GWEB or whatever we're going to call it program to serve as matching funds so that we use the state funding as the matching funds that we need for those federal funds. So it would come into the Water Resources Department to the whatever we're going to call this entity in the future.
that's in distinction.
So just to clarify, then, in Section A, when we first start off talking about that's what we have at that point, if I'm not correct.
That's correct.
Okay. Representative Thompson?
Let's see if I get this right. If the federal funds require a match, how are you going to handle that? I mean, Hubbard, is it going to be the water resource funds? Is it going to handle through it? I mean, because these match funds are going to require some proof.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, what we have proposed in the federal proposal is that each of the four states would use their existing mechanisms that they have to deliver money on the ground to deliver the federal funds. Those federal funds, and what's being proposed in the governor's recommended budget right now, is $100 million, approximately $25 million per state. Those funds would come in the case of Oregon, into the GWEB program or whatever its successor is. And they would be used, they would be matched by the state funds that GWEB has, and we can also, they don't have to be matched dollar for dollar in cash. So we could use, if we're providing technical assistance through those federal funds, we could match that with technical assistance that we're providing through state agency staffing.
Well, if I understand right, the federal funds can only be used on the ground projects. There can be no administrative costs. And if, how are we going to go about handling the auditing of that inside to make sure that the accountability goes back up the hill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, it is not a requirement that 100% of those funds be delivered to the ground. And there are still discussions going on with Congress about how those monies may be allocated. There is a recognition that in order to deliver money to the ground to quality work, you have to also have capacity to do that. And so there is a willingness to allow some part of those funds to be used for technical assistance, counsel support, doing assessments, doing follow-up monitoring so that we're making sure that we're getting the results from those projects. So some portion of that money presumably will be allowed to be used for other than on-the-ground purposes, and also there is discussion about an appropriate amount of administration money so that those funds can be administered by each of the four states.
Thompson.
I guess in order to feel comfortable with the federal match part of it, could I ask a question of Roy Hemingway, or either of you can answer this? What guidelines do we have at this time? Because it looks like to me like it's pretty important that they express their point of view now, since this is the budget process and we're getting down to the crunch.
Representative Thompson, the administration, which proposed the $100 million fund in the president's budget, has not put forward anything more than the guidance that was in the budget document itself, which was very general. And they have not put forward yet any appropriations language that they're going to send to the Hill. So we don't know the details of the proposal, including what percentage of match or whether in-kind or hard match is going to be required, or even necessarily what they're going to propose with respect to how much of the money has to go to the ground. What we have had are discussions with people in the CEQ in the White House about what we think ought to be in that, and we have some idea of where they might be heading. But until we actually see that language and see it in draft, we think we'll probably see it in draft form before it goes to the Hill, then at that time we can give you more details. But right now we don't have the details that you would like to see and that I would like.
More follow-up?
Yeah.
Excuse me, but this thing's pretty important in the process. If they haven't given us the guidelines, and if we misappropriate our money here as the percentage and breakdown and what they want, we may not qualify for the match under the parameters that they draw. And it seems to me we need some kind of a basic guidelines at this time in order to do our job properly.
Representative Thompson, in our discussions with the administration to date, we have been quite confident that the kind of match that they're talking about would be clearly within the parameters of the program we're now carrying out. And we have not had much concern that we would not have a program which would qualify for the match.
Let me extend this line of question a little bit. So do you see a problem, and have you conveyed the amounts of what the matches might be required to the co-chairs, the ways and means, and the leadership?
Mr. Chairman, we have not seen much that we can convey at this time. These have all been fairly general discussions.
You see potential for a hole in the budget?
Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure I understand
you. Well, I think what Representative Thompson is getting at is, as we go through our budget with the 35% and the 65%, do we have enough room in that budgeting process to take care of the matches that might be required from the federal government?
Mr. Chair, I think Louise, I don't want to answer.
Mr. Chair, I believe there is enough flexibility within the existing budget proposals and the budget discussions to make sure that we will have the adequate match to get those federal funds in here. I think the Congress is going to be fair, and this money is going to come through the Department of Commerce, is going to provide some flexibility as long as there is accountability for the funds back to the federal government, which I think in the case of Oregon are more comfortable with our ability to account than the other three states at this point because we have mechanisms in place already.
Could we have some documentation to this committee, and I would suggest to the co-chair?
Mr. Chair, as soon as we will give you what we have, which isn't very much right now, and as soon as we have more, we'll make sure that you have it. As soon as we have it.
I thought the President's budget has gone to Congress.
Senator Duke, the President's budget has gone to Congress, but the appropriations language itself has not. My understanding.
But doesn't that mean that the legislative branch is the one who's going to make the decision on all of this? Have you talked with, who's taking the lead in our congressional delegation
here? Senator Dukes, we've had discussions with nearly every member of the delegation. As you're aware, we do not have someone on appropriations from the Oregon delegation, so we're a bit handicapped here. So we have had discussions with Representative Dix from Washington about the fund in a very general way. We continue to have contact there. We're hoping that the governor, when he goes back at the end of April, can meet with Senator Gorton, who is the senior member from the Northwest delegation on the Appropriations Committee, who has also been very supportive of this effort to the point of wanting to increase the fund by 3 times. So we are working closely with them. Since the administration hasn't put forward yet what details they want, it hasn't been appropriate for us to go into great detail with members of the delegation about questions such as match. The Congress just finished its budget resolutions, I believe, this week, and so they haven't started the appropriations process yet.
I guess they take a different tack. I know. Had the opportunity to talk with my member of Congress last Sunday, and he understands how I think he had operates on all of this, and he understands that while Washington and California have benefited from the congressional budget, that Oregon has not yet, and that he ought to be in the room every time one of these meetings happens because somebody won't be, and it does not be Oregon. I know that we don't have anyone who normally takes the lead on fish issues, but My concern is that ultimately Congress will make the decision, and that we have not fared well in the past, and that Oregon ought to be coming up with how we think it ought to go and not relying on the administration of where they want to go. Because as far as Oregon is concerned, other than for the Willamette, they have been, had lots of promises and no delivery so far. I guess I would encourage you to talk with whoever looks as though they may be able to surface as our champion and move forward with the delegation. That they need to understand that our share of $100 million or $200 million or $300 million if Gordon is successful is very important to us. And I have another question. Does this mean that at this point the governor anticipates not spending any of this money on the Willamette?
Senator Duke, I'm...
You've always earmarked that as a separate funding and a separate cap.
The intention is to spend these funds wherever they're needed in the state. Including the Willamette. And if I could go back and respond, Senator, just to your earlier comment. The first thing that was in the budget was that the President's budget said that this fund would be allocated equitably among the states. And with the power of the Alaska delegation and the Washington delegation and the California delegation, we know what equity means. And so the first thing the governor did at the National Governors Association meeting was meet with Gray Davis and Tony Knowles and Gary Loss and get them to agree that equitably meant equally. And so he then conveyed that in a meeting in which two of those governors were present in the the CEQ chair, George Francis, and we believe now that that is the administration position, that it will be equal. We also believe that the informal conversations we've held with senior people like Representative Dix and Senator Gordon's staff are that they will also support an equal formula. So we don't have a firm handshake on that yet. And we so far the conversation has been very positive.
Any other questions before Roy moves on to the rest of his presentation?
Thank you, Mr. I mean, this is interesting discussion. We're talking about the federal pie in the sky that really, if indeed it happens, it's second year of the biennium for us, relatively speaking. I mean, roughly. And I think if we do run into some technical tweaking that needs to be done as far as concerns, that certainly would be within the purview of the Indian Committee and the E-Board to make those sorts of adjustments. So I think, Mr. Chair, that we need to be focused on our money and how we do that rather than worry about something that may or may not happen that we will have the ability to deal with at the time, if indeed it does happen. One of the problems I have, I mean, I kind of was attracted to the idea of the money flowing through DAS, and part of the reason for that being that it's very likely that not all of the 65% of the capital part of Measure 66 goes to GWEB for GWEB project. We have other things we can do with this money. We could do ocean research. We could do lots of other things that I think certainly fit under that purview. And I just thought it seemed to me it was cleaner for maybe some not totally logical reasons that the funds were distributed to agencies from a non-natural resource agency. I'm trying to look long term at this as to how these things tend to play themselves out.
Representative Cruz, we can understand that point of view, certainly. Whatever agency you tell to spend the money in whatever way, we'll do it. And if you tell Water Resources to spend these funds in a particular way, they will do it, including on non-GWEB functions. The only point we wanted to make is that the program we're running right now is not broken. It works very well, very efficiently. And we, under the principle of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, we were, it was our preference to keep things in Water Resources. To go back to one thing you said about when the funds, the federal funds might be spent, what Congress is debating is the FY 2000 budget. And that would begin on October 1 of this year and then go to October 1 of the year 2000. So it would be, most of this money would be available in the first half of the biennium. We would hope that if Congress does this, they would also do it for the FY 2001 budget.
I guess I'm just not quite as optimistic.
And I think we want to keep one thing clear. I don't think this committee or this legislative body is trying to totally change the program we have. I think what we're trying to do is institutionalize it so it's not just running through the governor's office, and when governors change or whatever, or legislators change, we don't see a whole new program come in. I think that's our overall intent.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just so you understand, I think what we're trying to say here is the service that GWEB as an entity gets from the Water Resources Department is excellent service. We have 7-day turnaround on requests for payments, and when you're trying to get payments out to groundwater conservation districts and local watershed councils who are trying to meet payroll, pay for project expenses, that is critically important. I am technically an employee of GAS, and I can tell you that the GWEB employees see their expense checks long before I do in a month. And so what we're trying to say is we get excellent turnaround on requests for payments from Water Resources Department, and given what those of us who are technically employed by DAS see in terms of turnaround on our requests for payments, Water Resources Department has a much better ability to deliver quickly.
Where would you like to proceed?
I don't think we're disagreeing. From what I heard Louise say, you don't have a problem with it going to DAS and then going to Water Resources. So I think the language is actually okay. It just didn't sound at first as though we were agreeing.
That's not mean the proposed language.
No, the language the way it is here in the dash two. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it is proposed. It's in the
middle. Right. Correct.
Mr. Chair, this has been a very helpful discussion to us. We have a couple of technical issues that are in the written testimony I won't cover, and Section 17 is fine with us as printed, and I want to thank you for this opportunity.
Okay. Any more questions, Brian? If not, thank you very much.
We'll be here the rest of the day.
Okay, thank you. Staff would like to run through some work they've done. Judith has done with sections 18, 19, 21, 22, 23, and 26. And I think that will set the stage maybe and help us clarify some of the issues. And then I'll ask the Natural Resources Group to come forward and give us an update on what they've been working on. Judith, would you go ahead?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, as Jeanette and I were scrambling to put something together for you for this Saturday. I passed out at your seat some documents. The top page, it lists big picture measure 66 questions from Jeanette and Judah. And I believe one of our first decision points does relate to whether or not the committee wishes to go with the GWEB and ONRO proposal in the dash two amendments as compared to the work group proposal, which suggests creating an Oregon Watershed Conservation Commission.
Judith, let me just clarify that there might be other proposals too. We don't want to narrow this down to just two. We've had one group of people that have spent an awful lot of time working, but I don't want to exclude anyone else who might be doing some work on the side, too, that we've asked to come to these hearings and present to us. It's fine to compare these two right now and try to help us move forward and understand what we're dealing with,
but I don't want anyone in the audience to think that this is the only two things we're going to be looking at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that clarification. Underneath the big picture page, we've listed some specific questions, and these, I will say, the sections related there do relate to the proposal. But you will see under Section 8 is where the commission is created, and directly under that you will see a comparison between the proposed membership for the Oregon Watershed Conservation Commission, and then directly followed by the proposed Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board membership in the Dash 2 amendments. So if you'll take a moment just to compare those, and we can then have a discussion about those differences and maybe any questions you might have about that.
I wonder if you can remind me who the work group was that developed the Oregon Watershed Conservation Commission.
There was several people involved in that, and maybe
organizations, I guess, come after.
Well, why don't we have later on in the next testimony, it'll be Greg Miller. Okay, there's several people involved. And so. Part of the confusion, I think, for me at least, if not for the rest of the committee, is that these pages are not numbered. And we have, let's go through and straighten that out right now. We have the one sheet that says the big picture. Let's count that number one. And then we've got the second page I've got here is starts with April 16th and section 2. Let's call that page 2. It says April 16th. Yeah. Okay. And then the third page will be the page with section 16 at the very top.
Section 13.
Section 13, yes.
Three, you said?
That'd be three. The next page says page 17 at the top. That's four. And the next one is page 23 at the top. That'd be page 5. Does that help us? Hopefully a little bit.
It does. Then what is it?
Okay. Okay. Are you minus the sheet?
No, I'm okay. I'm an expert in the numbers here. I'm just trying to keep track of all the paper we have, paper we got, compare the two. And I'm going to ask a question in part because I'm a new kid on the block. But we've got a ballot measure 66 responsibility, we want to fund what the folks are doing out in the field. And we've got a lot of agencies involved in the Oregon plan. And I know we need to deal with getting it more organized. I'm just wondering, as all these different proposals are coming forward, if we're going to be able to have the ability within this legislative session to be able to put together this to pass the plan of organization and do the funding priorities as well. I'm just starting to feel overwhelmed a little bit.
I think we all are. What I see is we're accomplishing today is that we're going to try to, as best we can, understand our data, as best we can, understand the natural resource group that's put their proposal together, and they've talked with some of the other
stakeholders too. We're going to have hearings. I mean, this is a time that the public, general public, can come in and talk to us. And then I think our work is then we have to start putting this together and laying it out where we can compare them and pull this thing together. But I think our function here today is to, at the very best we can, understand the proposals that are before us and what people might want to bring to us today. Does that help you address anything? Representative Thompson?
I think what's happening here is I see mystified looks in the audience. I mean, there's been groups that have worked behind the scenes, and it's coming forward, and a lot of people, I'm sure, don't have the information of what we're dealing with. We need to get more than just copies of the committees. We've been talking about things here in the committee that a lot of people are looking lost. So is it on these proposals? Is that possible that we can get more public copies so at least they can have an idea where we're going?
Hey, Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, I did make a whole set of copies of both the new proposed, the work group proposal, and the dash twos. If they're out, I'm very happy to go make some right now.
Okay, those are don't. I know there's a couple people contacting me now.
Mr. Chair?
I'm just saying, Leonard.
Again, on the issue of the work group, I don't recall how the work group was selected.
It was not selected. This was not a work group that was selected by this committee. What we did was ask all of the different groups, whether it was fishermen or natural resource people, to get together and work out proposals and bring to us. But we did not formally appoint or assign.
Are we comfortable that they selected everybody that may have interest in ballot measure 66 money to be part of that work group? I looked over the list, but I'm not comfortable that all the groups that I have talked to were there on that at the table to go over the list.
I'm sure they were not. And I'll let Representative Morgan speak to this too, but I would hope that other people who had other interests would become involved and look over the proposals and come forward with their own suggestions. Co-chair, very well.
I think it's a certainty that they were not. And the point is that we started off with dash twos, which essentially was a box that we scraped a lot of stuff into and put it on the table and told everybody this is just a catch-all draft for the purposes of getting something to people that would take it apart, put it back together again with different proposals. Then we announced in this committee or a couple of different times that we would ask specific folks to convene a downline or get together with your interest group or work through this dash two and bring back either amendments to it or a document in gross so that we could go through them section by section and pull all those things together. So this proposal is one of those efforts. It's not the only effort. It's certainly not a finished product, even in its draft form or in the form that's been presented. But I think what we need to do is go through it, look at what changes might be there, discuss the ideas that have come forward, and push it back out again. And make sure that other groups get invited at this point to talk specifically about things that we think might be good or bad. Stuff from the dash two people like, the stuff from the proposals, the new proposals that will come in that would be better. But at some point in time, we have to make sure as a committee that everybody that's expressed an interest has gone through it and made comments.
Just a comment. I mean, I'm like Representative King, I'm brand new to this, but I'm struck by the bureaucracy that's created this proposal. And that shows me a great deal involved. I'm sure there's a lot of subtle issues here that maybe being a new person to this issue, quite draft, maybe requires that kind of a bureaucracy. I'm more interested in those kinds of discussions why we would be spending huge amounts of money for a new layer of government as opposed to using what we already have and redirecting their purposes towards implementing ballot measure 66 as opposed to just hiring a whole bunch of new people.
What's in there, Leonard? I don't think you were. I think you were ill at our last meeting, but specifically, I asked.
Chairman, is that before, during, or after the meeting?
I don't appreciate you talking about it publicly.
Any of us that we did ask, not only the governor's office, but Ken Rockwell in the fiscal office, to run through the cost these proposals out for us. So I have not got that yet.
Just looking, reading it, it would appear that it's going to be...
It's an issue.
Another issue.
Senator Morgan, did you have a comment?
No, I just wanted to kind of paraphrase what Senator Ferrioli said, that the work group that about this proposal was just one of some number of work groups, but we don't know how many there are yet. And this was a group that brought these talks together.
Mm-hmm. That does concern me in that it would just seem to make more sense if we were going to have a work group, we all agreed what that was, and they want to, you know, so that we were comfortable that what we got back was a balanced document representing groups of a variety of interests. So.
Mr. Chairman, the committee reminds us that we kind of asked that question of the committee. Do you want to have a work group? Do you want to do it out as a group? Do you want many groups and then synthesize it here?
And I didn't know we were talking about letting people go off and create their own group. I assumed that meant we were going to select
it. Actually, the group we selected was the committee. I mean, the point is that we'd have a whole bunch of people doing different stuff and bring it here so everybody was hearing it at the same time.
Senator Dishford.
I just wanted to comment. You know, folks aren't as new as you think you are. You've got really good input, and I just suggest you follow them because I understand this thing of a new, and it's April already, so you're going to have to lose it, but you're not as new as you think you are.
That's it, gentlemen. Thompson. You can't play.
I have no more. Just after eight.
Right.
My assumption that other groups had the same opportunity to do what this group has done, and that there is some responsibility as far as other groups are concerned if they wish to take that active role to go ahead and take it rather than for us to mandate that they must as such. So unlike the representative from Portland, I'm not concerned at this particular point. I will be concerned if the other groups do not take any active part in the process here, and then when a finished product appears, be there to complain about it, which I don't envision happening, but that would be my concern.
Representative Thompson.
I understood that we were going to look section by section, and then when we had a problem, we were going to assign a work group. I have no problem with a work group going out and doing things. I do worry that when we come back and create a new bureaucracy, that the Republicans are leading this, and we lose our political position if you guys start creating more bureaucracy, and then we do. I think CWEB was a lean, mean machine, and I don't have a problem with people going out and doing work groups on the side, but let's get on with the proposal and 3225, and then if we get stuck.
Yeah. The part of what was concerning me was that this is a real solid report that came from the Natural Resource Work Group. And if they did that in a real short period of time, I'm doubly impressed. But it looked to me like, you know, a work group that had been working for a long time, and I wasn't aware that the work group, was happening. And I'm glad that it's here. So we're also taking a look and saying, well, gee, we work off of their proposed ROI versus the 3225, and other people don't necessarily haven't necessarily had access to the proposed language, and so they'll show up thinking that we're justifying the 3225 when indeed we're now kind of working off another set of notes. I think we need to have a central set of notes where we can be comparing what the proposals are back to, and the part we're concerned was that it looks like since we're halfway through the session, we're doing this big job, we're going to have to do it really quick, and that in order for other purposes to then realize that, well, maybe they haven't been on target and they want to have input in the process as well, that
we may move so fast, but we're experienced. You know, someone who now kind of wakes up to the fact that most of them can be out there.
I think that this is work group type discussions that we should probably have at a later time, but let's utilize our time today to hear from the people that have came in this afternoon and or today on a weekend and just acknowledge your information.
Just let me clarify something if I might. This natural resource work group has not been working on what you have per se for a long period of time. They've been working on it for a very short period of time. However, the people on the work group have been involved in this issue from the beginning. So nobody in any of these groups is coming into this and saying, gosh, we have endangered species in the state of Oregon. We didn't know that. I mean, that's not the perspective we're coming from. Everybody's been involved for the whole period of time we have been involved. The proposal was put together in a relatively short time frame, but it was based on a good body of information on the front end, including a look at the dash two amendments. Some of us did have a problem with going section by section when the first four pages of the dash two we couldn't live with. So, you know, it's a matter of what perspective you start from in this thing. And I think we have a lot of details that Brenda King to work out, but we also have some real big picture things that we need to make decisions on also.
Mr. King, this one was the last one that I'm going
to go through. I just want to say thanks for taking the time to go through the process of this. Because if some of us here on the committee, you know, kind of missing, you know, the understanding of how we have been processing here, then the odds are good that someone that's either in the audience or not in the audience yet, you know, would not necessarily know how we were going into process here. So it's helped me get a picture of it.
Butcher wanted to make a comment, and then we're going to move on.
Just in response to Representative Thompson's commentary about having a feeling of loss of identity because Republicans are creating bureaucracies, and by golly, pretty soon we're going to be raising taxes here. But just to add to the sense of irony for you, Representative Thompson, last night I was one of the guests at the Oregon League of Conservation Voters Standards.
An endangered species.
So I was on the threatened list.
Jared, you rather not, maybe.
What's a good news?
Let me call up the natural resource group. And I don't know, Roy or Greg, are you the spokesman or? Dan Lee or who?
Yes.
You need more chairs?
No, we've got a few folks out in the audience there that. Yes, ma'am.
For the record, my name is Greg Miller. I'm with Weyerhaeuser Company. With me is Jan Lee. I'll let them describe their role in this, and Pat Amadeo. Before I get started, this group represents just a small sample of the work group that's been diligently plowing through the box that you all created, known as 3225, and we have spent a lot of hours in a short amount of time to provide the product that you have at your feet with the notebook, and we hope to go through it in a very expeditious way to describe to you the product. Before I do that, though, I would like to list, there was a question from Representative Leonard about the participants in this group. I would like to preface that by saying that we do not have complete agreement in our work group. It is the work that we're doing is a work in progress, and having the opportunity to kind of chair this work group is an amazing opportunity. Just let me say that. So we have the
defenders. We call it a challenge.
Yeah, an opportunity. Mm-hmm. We've had the Defenders of Wildlife, Nature Conservancy, the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, Oregon Business Council, the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, the Oregon Dairy Council Association, the Oregon Farm Bureau, the Potato Commission, the Seed Growers Council, Small Woodlands, Oregon Trout, Oregon Water Resources Congress, Oregon Water Trust, Wheat Growers League, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, representatives from Douglas County Watershed, I guess it would be the Umpqua Watershed Council, Water for Life, and I think I might have missed Oregon Forest Industries Council. It is our hope that as we put this product out to the committee, that we could get some organization for both the committee and the interested parties in this working off of the same document, and fully expect that this platform that we put before you is one that, as we build out in this concentric circle, other folks that have expressed interest in this product, and we've heard that today, that they would come forward in the amendment process and make changes, and we'd work through that. That is our hope and our intent. What we have before you is a notebook with several tabs. There's an executive summary that is a section by section, and I think that will be the script that we work from for you today. There is a copy of the legislation that is currently in Legislative Council. Even late as yesterday afternoon, we're still wordsmithing. We expect to be wordsmithing that document if there is a agreement that the general principles in that document are supportable. There's a schematic of the state entity, for lack of a better term, that would receive Measure 66 dollars. I would say that it's not a new entity per se, but rather a shift. I mean, that's all this really amounts to, is we're shifting money over from lottery to Measure 66 purposes, and we're actually just shifting this entity. There's a schematic of the mechanism for Measure 66. There's a tab that lists watershed councils and SWCDs. There's a copy of the ballot Measure 66. Some resources generally for you to use as you work through this effort. Let me also add that what this work group did focus on was a policy framework, a governance structure and process, and mechanisms. And it's our hope that we could at least build the foundation and the elements to institutionalize the Oregon plan that we all worked so hard on last session. And we purposely avoided discussion, although it hasn't been easy, the discussion about budgets and dollars. That is an arena that we tried to stay out of. And so with that, I guess I would just begin with the section-by-section roadmap. And if you look under the summary tab, you'll find that section-by-section analysis. And there are, just to help you a little sort through your own document, -2, there are many applicable definitions in that document, but also where we vary, we would have a different definition for capital expenditures. I think I would like to let Pat kind of speak to that, please.
The definition of capital expenditure that's in the summary, we think truly reflects a traditional definition of capital expenditures that one would normally use. We have tried to address some of the issues that have been concerned to the committee and to some of the interest groups. One is how much monitoring can be included in the definition of capital expenditure.
In your tab behind summary, look on the legislation there, and you'll see in the definition, first page, you'll see
sub three,
a capital expenditure definition.
Thank you, Greg, for doing what I didn't do, which was looking at the committee to find out if they were anyway, what we tried to do was to address some of the issues that were of concern to this committee
as it related to monitoring function, a research function, and kind of defining what work it took to actually get to the project on the ground versus kind of long-term administration. We tried to do what we would suggest was a balancing act to include monitoring to the extent that it related to making sure by a relatively short-term monitoring function that the project worked. So there's a monitoring in there, and there is also research in the definition. In this definition, the research component would be research related to, kind of directly related to the project. It would not include long-term research. The rest of it, the other thing we did was try to put together or reinsert a definition of acquisition that was a little clearer, that basically said that acquisition is real property or interest therein, and it would include both all being between willing seller and obviously willing buyer, but it would include full fee or less than full fee, which basically means if you want an easement, a lease, a water right for some period of time. So we thought it was a little more precise than other drafts we've seen.
Mr. Chair? Yes. Senator
Duke? I seem to recall that the ballot measure made some reference to state police or some kind of enforcement. It appears to me it was just one that they wouldn't be able to capital. Project.
Correct. We had always assumed that the state police function was an administrative function, and it would be out of the 35%. That was our assumption.
Okay. Thank you.
Could you clarify the research you part of? If we've got an area of projects, people want to do projects, but we don't really have a good scientific basis for that. And I'm thinking maybe predation or maybe something more in line with capital construction.
If you look under sub D,
okay,
we tried on page 2, says technical design, research, and monitoring support directly related to the implementation of a project. So from our perspective, the research can't be kind of general pie-in-the-sky research, but it needs to, if we have a number of different capital projects or on-the-ground projects that people want to do, it would likely make sense that there be maybe one research component that might be fairly large, but it would be directly related to whether or not a specific on-the-ground function or undertaking makes some sense. That's what that sub D tries to get at, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
One of the areas that we heard last time that we were in front of this committee was a discussion about the regions. We went back to Ken Beerley with GWEB, we consulted with him, and we have changed those regional designations to also to address Senator Duke's issue with the Willamette region and the North Coast. And so in the definitional section under sub 4, you'll see how we, or you'll read how we have divvied up that, the basins. And then if you were to turn behind your tab that says commission and find the maps that we have included, you can visualize it's about the fourth, it's the fifth page behind that. You can visualize then the commission tab and then the map with the lines.
Which is the third page in the commission.
Yeah. And you can kind of visualize how that the basins have been aggregated.
So the only change you've made is between region 2 and 3.
Yeah, between the northeast and the southeast, we kind of split the state in half.
Okay.
That also aided us in how we would put together the commission structure, because we've heard that we'd like to see near equal representation east side, west side, given the land mass that the east side folks have to deal with. Moving along,
I appreciate your response. I'm still wondering why we're not looking at the boundaries that were viewed. My memory is that. I'm just remembering the boundaries of the eastern, and the reason why I'm asking is that we got a map just this week from another subject, from Dominion State Lands, and they were doing something on salmon disturbance impacts, and it was showing the salmon impact on the salmon habitats, and that. Basically, the salmon habitats were here, and that there weren't, there wasn't any significant salmon habitat in the south central southeastern. And here we still have quota in the southeastern area, and I've got some concerns. We've got the largest part of the works, over on the on the coastal and area, and we may not be addressing our resources compared to that. Are you looking to address resources according to the workload or according to regions here, and also in terms of your representation in that?
Mr. Chair, Representative King, a couple pages back there is a map of the existing GREB breakout.
Excuse me for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pam Lee with Oregon Water Resources Congress. When we met with Pam the other day, our idea was to look at the eastern part of the state and see if we had the best possible solution. Well, actually, if you look at Section 4, Region 4, you have the Columbia River drainage, and that's how that particular part of the state really fits well together, because those are all areas where the Columbia drainage east of the Cascades applies. When you look down in the southeast region, there are still salmonids, but they're not necessarily anadromous species. There is a very effective mechanism to bring those together, because those are mostly the inner basins. In the Klamath Basin, for example, there are quite a few federal agencies working on the ESA, and they work across that southern part of the state. So if you look at species, if you look at the areas and the geographic positions, it does work out better if you have northeast and southeast. We're not sure that the same amount of resources may eventually be needed in the southeast, but that's something that will have to be determined.
So if I can follow, in terms of that region, in terms of, let's say, representation on the commission, would that mean that they would have equal equal representation, as all the other regions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative King, what we are saying at this point is they would be broken down according to the list that you see in this book, and there would always be at least 5 of the 11 from east of the Cascades. Further on the regional representation that would be on the commission, we've talked about, to address Senator Duke's concern, rotating people in the basins would be on the commission, so that one area does not have the exclusive ability to remain on the commission. And it was also brought to my attention that water quality is another major issue we're dealing with statewide, and there would be just as many resources required in the southeast for that basin as any other region.
Do you have questions?
Just an observation. There's two things that need to curb that cross referencing. One is that if you haven't got the list of potentials, when you had a couple of names you may have heard or not, the Lohontan, the Sui Chub, the high elevation species that live in the desert regions, all are candidates for listing. So I think there's a reason to have a representative from that district, including things like adjudication on the Klamath Basin, water rights, and so forth. So it's a pretty hot area, which isn't getting the focus right now that the coastal and the Columbia Basin, but their term is coming. But the other thing is that the projects will be driven in a different way. The projects will be driven by the listings. And so even though you have somebody helping
focus our attention on the broader issues, most of the lightning's going to strike where the listings are, and that's going to be up in the Columbia Basin and over on the coast, and then in the Willamette as we move into that area. And I think it'll be, in terms of just numbers of projects and dollars spent and time extended, et cetera, you'd see a far fewer impacts and expenditures in the eastern and south central regions. So that doesn't mean we shouldn't have somebody there helping us understand what their issues are going to be.
Mr. Chair, maybe I can kind of supplement that, because our view is that that the designation does not necessarily assure dollars, that the dollars would be project-driven based on need, and needs would change over time. It's also important to know that we're not only looking at salmonids, but we're also looking at the TMDLs and water quality issues, which is statewide.
Yep. It's in the team, and it's in the crew.
And, you know, I certainly don't want to have Eastern Oregon or Southeastern Oregon not represented. I mean, they mm-hmm. need to do that, and I know that there are, you know, issues, usually contaminant issues there, but if indeed we've got 80% of the problem and, you know, maybe 90% of the population, you know, in one area, I didn't want to have them, you know, dramatically underweighted in terms of being able to address the problems. And, you know, in order to make sure we had geographic equal.
Most of my points being covered, but there is not a, on this map, there is not a region in the state that does not have an abundant fish. If you remember, the Klamath Basin does have some significant problems, and they are in the south region, but you know, ultimately, the thing I've been talking about since day one is, you know, let's not forget water quality, and that's everywhere, and that's at least as significant as the fisheries issues.
And it all comes down to that.
Let me clarify for myself, in case maybe I'm the only one here that doesn't. But the new map that you proposed on the third map, the third page back, and the existing GWEB map, is the coastal region lines the same then?
Yes.
So they don't look the same. And so I just wanted to clarify and make sure we're talking about
Mr. Chairman, they're supposed to be the same. My artful skills may not be good. They're intended to be the same.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you, sir. I understood last time we were all talking that one of the purposes for the regions was for the distribution of money, that money was going to be divvied up, and I'm getting a different sense of that. Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, the money is not going to be, we did not assume the money would be divvied up by region, but it would be sent out, and that's probably a later point in the plan, in kind of two forms. One, a general grant, and then secondly, maybe a subaccount for those entities that had been active, had been participants in a watershed action plan, whether those be local governments, watershed councils, soil and water districts, so that the granting decision makers could look at that and say, they're doing something, they're moving ahead, we see what their vision is, it meets our criteria, and then divvy it up that way. But we did not anticipate that it would be divided up by region.
Are there watershed councils in all five regions?
Yes,
I do. That's very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I, along with Pat, it was my assumption, too, that we wouldn't be distributing the money by region, but that money would go to need and to the ability or the merits of the proposals that are being made, rather than, I mean, if we can save and do something in one area that is meaningful, that would seem to me to be the priority.
Well, let me clarify this, because I had the vision that that's where you were going, and I assume then that where I got confused, there were some groups within that group that did want to divide the money by regions. Is that right? Basin.
Mr. Chair, there was some discussion about seed money for various watershed councils and for soil and water districts, but that was to be distributed within the basins or the local entities. So the lines here for the regions don't really speak to that. Actually, the lines for the regions are to put the regional coordinators out there in the field and to keep the basins and local entities working together down the same pathway.
I thought we should clarify that.
Okay, and if we're able to move to this a little more quickly, we'll get to the kind of the funding mechanism that will also, and once again, reinforce what we talked a little bit about here. As I said before, in section 4, what we were really striving for there is a framework for the Oregon Plan. And if you also turn to the Commission tab, and if you will look at the first page and see a schematic of the regional model, what we are attempting to do there with that structure is not add any layers of bureaucracy. There is no staff other than the regional coordinator that goes there, and that's under, as I understand, an existing program. There are regional coordinators out there. And our desire, and just from an organizational effort, is to encourage cooperation among all of these entities that are located within these basins as you break down to the ground level councils and districts, and provide coordination at the state, local, and federal level. This model relies on those voluntary actions at the local level to develop the watershed action plans, and also a part of this framework discussion, we also encourage and require balancing of restoration with sustaining a healthy economy and a healthy environment. In section 6 of the legislation, that is the area where we have actions under the Oregon Plan that are based on the local watershed plans. We have a list of bullet items here, and I don't know that it would merit reading that laundry list. You can read them as well, but just touch on them briefly. Sustainable watershed functions, voluntary efforts at the local level, how the state agencies respond and cooperate with local agencies. Under Section 8, that is the heart of at least the government structure, and we spent a lot of time talking about that last hearing session where I threw up in the bathroom, like I said.
We did not.
Where we put up on the overhead a schematic of that. We have since gone back and reorganized that. We are also getting some, and that's behind the Commission tab, and the second page behind the regional model. We have since gotten some feedback and some input from counties and local government, and that's what we hope comes out of this whole process, is all the interested stakeholders can take a look at this and say, here's how we'd like to change the structure and have our input into that. And we would like to talk through that with those folks and have that as a change in the diagram. I'm not sure what it really sketches out to be, but it would have a local government, county, or city rep on the Conservation Commission. Did I capture that accurately?
There are a number of places where that could occur, either in one of the soil and water districts at the watershed council level or at the at-large level, and I believe the county representatives will speak to that later today.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, maybe I can speak to a little bit. My clients don't really have any, we don't care whether or not these are designated or not designated. We assume that watershed councils are so widely represented that you can find almost anybody of any persuasion in one of these jurisdictions. The governor could to reach down and find the kind of appointment he wanted, whether or not that was a local county official, whether or not it was someone from the environmental community, whether or not it was somebody from a particular interest group. So we basically thought, well, a watershed council, there's so many different interests on there that we assume that you could find somebody.
Another area that we have changed, we would add a tribal representative on this commission, and that was something that we have also picked up and heard in the deliberations of this committee. We have not had direct contact in our work group but we hope in expanding this circle of stakeholders that that would be an integral part of our efforts here to deliver the final product. I'm not going to dwell too much more on this schematic. We'll just say that what we heard from last hearing and the comments we tried to address and in this representational, this structure, governance structure. Under, are there any questions, though, that...
Well, let me just say, Greg, I'd like you to give your presentation and finish it up in about 20 minutes, and then move to the appointed time for...
Yeah, we can do that.
One co-chair just asked me, how widespread is this document? And one of my fears is that people in the audience haven't the foggiest idea what we're talking about.
Sure, copies on the...
Yeah.
With the maps and everything so they can follow?
Yeah.
Okay.
Under Section 10, we're moving right along here. Under Section 10, we have the commission functions, and I'll just briefly touch on the bullet items there. And this describes the role of the commission and establishes a locally based integrated planning and management process. So if you recall, the way we started out was with policy, a structured governance and process, and ultimately a funding mechanism. And this is to assist local voluntary efforts. And there would be key elements in that process. The commission would provide guidance and protocol standards for the development of action plans. They would assist with reviewing strategic plans of all natural resource agencies, trying to generate that synergy of cooperation and coordination. Develop standardized data collection and support systems, a database, if you will. Solicit input from the public for proposed changes of the Oregon plan. I mean, outside of folks coming to the legislative process and the individual state agencies, this would be a way for the public to have input into the Oregon plan as we currently know it. It would also allocate funds and administer the Watershed Improvement Grant Program. Under Section 12, that is a description of the guidance for the Oregon Plan, and it states the Oregon Plan's public purpose. I believe we referenced the existing statute under which the Oregon Plan is listed. And in Section 14, I think is that even though we don't have a long dialogue here about this, this is a fairly important section that lays out how state agencies that have Oregon Plan responsibilities are to work within the framework and also provide the coordination and technical assistance to local entities, and also how they report to the legislature. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Jan.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm going to take it from the staffing and the funding perspective. So if you look at the map of the commission, underneath the commission, you'll see the executive director. Further behind that, there is a listing of the actual staff that exists today versus what we're proposing under the structure. If you'll notice there, in regard to the GWEB staffing, there are actually at this point 7 staff folks. I believe it's 6.8 in the budget.
Sure. Yes. Usually the password mechanism.
You're under the
commission tab.
I got there, but
you're under the commission tab.
Oh,
you're behind the.
I guess we're point where.
Org chart.
I got to here.
Okay, flip one more page.
I got the map.
The map. Mm-hmm. Section.
Yeah, we're.
We don't have the G web
feed.
Like this one is the commission listing, and one is the.
Under the, yeah, that's the first page of that under that tab.
Okay.
First thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a question.
Okay.
No, that's it.
There.
Okay. I don't think I had under commission. You go to the commission.
Staffing tab.
Yeah. Staffing tab. That'll help.
That's
fine.
Which one
are you looking at? Yeah. I don't have that.
We're going to staffing.
Staffing tab. I don't have anything in the staffing tab.
There may have been a disconnect because this was a piece that was added later, I believe, after the notebooks were delivered.
Okay.
We will give you our copies.
Well, I think we can take care of this because I'm running off the book that you brought to my office yesterday.
Right, that was earlier than the rest
and
of
it. That's why I need an update.
Mr. Chairman. This is on a need-to-know basis. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a question of the, especially it's a question of the folks here participating in the public hearing, not the panel necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
The, there were a few of the exhibits that apparently there were copies that were distributed earlier, and I note that there are no more copies of the exhibits available over there, and I think it's going to be awful hard for people to follow the discussion without the exhibits. I've asked staff to make copies of all the documents that the committee has, but I just wondered, is it a safe assumption that everybody in the room wants it set? Okay. I guess we just get a nose count and get everybody a copy. We'll have that available as soon as the sheets literally will be warm. Get a copy to everybody. And I think what really needs to happen is that this document needs to go to other groups like watershed councils, et cetera, so that they can make their input as well. And we'll figure out how to do that.
Perfect. Sure. And go ahead and I'll look out for this co-chair.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, we really don't need to have this particular mechanism to discuss this. It was a comparison of what exists at GWIM and what would exist under this structure. Basically, what we're saying is that that staffing is shifted, so we're not talking about new dollars in regard to that. The executive director would be responsible to the commission and would carry out all the functions of the commission in the same way that an agency director would provide those functions. When you go back to the chart where you have the commission and the staff that works for the commission, there are actually five positions. I need to get it in front of me. There is actually, off to the left of the executive director, five positions, and the positions we thought were necessary are, for the basic part, already encompassed in GWIB, fiscal performance audit, people to do standardized protocols so that watershed councils will have tools, and a GIS system person. Under that structure are the regional coordinators, and those are the five people that GWIB already has out there in the field. These folks would work with local basins, watershed councils, districts, and other local governments to put together the action plans. Basically, we're not talking about a very significant change in staffing at all, and it could actually be a shift of staffing. The watershed councils and their authorities would remain consistent with the statute today. The soil and water conservation districts would remain consistent with today's statute. Section 21 is where that discussion occurs. We haven't changed any of the authorities in that section. Section 22 actually establishes the funding, and for that you would need the chart. That chart was available in the 35 handouts that we had back there. Hopefully a good number of people have it and can look at that.
Look under your funding tab.
In our schematic, we assume that the money would come directly from the lottery fund down to the park and natural resources fund and then be split off into the park and the watershed accounts. However, I believe where we differ is we don't bring in staff, we don't bring in their 16.5% overhead, although some of the monies can be transferred directly without the overhead, the lottery dollars, for example. We give the money directly to the Oregon Watershed Commission and its staff so that the federal funds and other matching monies coming in can actually be dealt with in the same place. All of the federal programs have different requirements. Some allow capital expenditures only, others allow both capital and administrative costs, and those will vary significantly So to us, it seemed that the best action would be to put them in a place where there could be accountability for everything in kind of a one-stop shopping center. The fund authorities would be those that would apply in any agency or any body of the state. One of the entities that we looked at as a model in putting this together was the Oregon Potato Commission, which is actually a state agency and has a lot of the same mechanisms. When you get down below the commission, we looked at having two levels of funding, perhaps related to those a little bit earlier, but one of them would be to the left, the smaller oval, which would go directly out on the ground, mainly to capital expenditures, and that would be for putting together these action plans and providing implementation of projects under the action plans.
And maybe I can stop here and kind of clarify what the legislature would actually look at this point, because then going through that issue on the other side on parks, what you would see is what you really don't get to see now together under one question. The commission, hypothetically, at least this is my view, would submit a budget to the legislature. It would likely delineate where the 35% was going to go. And that not being capital expenditures, we assumed that, and that is something that the legislature would obviously scrutinize and adjust and make recommendations to. And the extent to which that money went to state agencies that were performing Measure 66 functions, you would be able to see in one budget document. Part of the general concern was that there are 66 or C66, post-66, there are Oregon plan functions throughout state government in budgets that you couldn't see. At least for the $66, you would see what agencies were performing or what functions relevant to 66 in that document, and make whatever adjustments and changes you did.
Mr. Chair, continuing on that, I think what you would see then is a meshing of some of the budget items we now see in the Governor's Natural Resource Office with the GWEB budget and the GWEB options that are in the Water Resources Department. So instead of going through a number of sections, those become combined into a unit where the programs can all be addressed at one time.
Let me just clarify, and I think it's clear from your diagram, but just so we're all on the same page. You're suggesting that on the circle that has Zona Water Conservation Districts and Watershed Councils, that even that funding will, again, be divided 35-65.
I wasn't suggesting that. I mean, it seems to me that when we look at this, we had assumed that when we had the discussion that there would be, because there was a general sense that soil and water conservation districts and watershed councils needed stable funding,
certainty.
We also heard from Ken Beerley that they needed to be motivated, and just giving them certainty didn't assure motivation. So he wanted to fund them based on being able to look at what their action plans were, and they might get they would obviously will likely be funded for more than one project, but to implement an action plan. The extent to which those action plans involve both capital expenditures and then some administrative costs, that's reflected in with this little line through it. Does that explain that?
Yes, I think there is the need for some administrative funds for those entities. Mm-hmm. And in future years, when all of the funding will be available, that could be accommodated.
If I might add, what we are trying to establish with the mechanism is a long-term mechanism that works regardless of today's discussions over those $66. So we looked at it from a watershed investment program that goes out to that side of the equation for those entities we just mentioned, and then we would have, and they would have, and they would feed off of viable watershed action plans, And then on the other side, a statewide grant program where even those entities would have the ability to compete for those dollars for on-the-ground projects that get sent out. And that those funds that came back to those viable watershed action plans would be then determined upon with those own entities how they're spent based on their own priorities. So the Watershed Council would then spend their money as they see fit at the right quarter, at the right time, and depending on the weather or whatever the case may be, but having those kind of flexibilities built in for the entity.
You see the language for that in Section 22, Sub 7. It sets up not only the Watershed Investment Program that Greg refers to, but also the Statewide Grant Program. And the Statewide Grant Program should be available to more folks than the other program for the local entity. You might look at statewide research to screen other kinds of projects that are really programs across the basin. State and federal agencies, in our version, cannot apply for these funds. If they would seek funds under this program, they would have to have a co-applicant who is a local government, a watershed council, or someone out on the ground as a partner, so it really pushes the partnership feature. All of this process is dealing with the funding authorities and the fund itself all have the same reporting, financial audit, and now additionally performance audit requirements.
Section 24 through 35.
Section 36 is actually the legal fund the committee discussed the other day. Section 37 and 38 is the application process, who can apply and how that's done. Again, Watershed Council from 39. I might point out to you Section 42 specifically, which is rulemaking. We have narrowed the rulemaking only to the fiscal responsibilities, and there is no enforcement or other rulemaking for this entity.
Again, so what you're essentially doing is moving this process from administrative rule within the water with the GWEB like it is now to statute.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Nisley, our intent is to shift it to its own independent mechanism so that we can accommodate the project in a more rapid process and also have total accountability for the writing plan in one place.
Yeah. Have you given, has there been extensive discussion as to whether you would want all of that in statute or whether you would want to have some leeway for administrative rules?
Maybe the chair, maybe I'm confusing you. There are administrative rule provisions that deal with all the fiscal responsibilities. That includes how project money may be distributed, who can apply, and the application process. I believe all of those mechanisms are allowed here to be developed, maybe capital.
Mr. Kocher, we have discussed that, but frankly, as you can imagine, we have not had a great amount of time to determine whether or not this rulemaking authority is enough. What we have said is certainly no regulatory authority, no new regulatory authority, but the question is we didn't know whether or not this rulemaking authority was sufficient, but we kind of at some point closed up to shut the book so we can get this printed up to you for today.
The last item I might point out is the Natural Heritage Advisory Council would be shifted to this mechanism, and our understanding is that that can occur with no fiscal impact.
That concludes our presentation in less than 20 minutes.
Good. Thank you.
I've got a bunch of questions, and the chair will indulge me for a minute or two here. One of the things that we've heard continuously from the proponents and from the public is that they didn't intend for us to build a new bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
And the OBC program, when it hit the counter, didn't get past what I'll call the gag test. Everybody looked at the superstructure and thought that it was too much. Yet I think there's a real clear acknowledgement that there has to be some kind of a coordination between state agencies that have pieces and parts of programs. And we found six agencies with 12 different enhancement programs for either habitat or wildlife or watersheds or fisheries. And sometimes they work together and sometimes arguably they work at cross purposes.
for instance, without getting too emotional about the hatchery program and this hatch box program and the step volunteers and the wild fish policies, there's some disconnect. Why is this commission format better than what we have, and how does it apply the required and needed coordination functions without just building about 10 layers of superstructure on top of soil and water conservation districts and water systems? Why is it better?
Let me take a crack at that, Senator Ferrioli. This basically, in our view, codifies what is already being done. And maybe you actually have never seen it kind of laid out, but we didn't really invent much. We just tried to pull together the functions and a lot of the people who are already out there and change the eWeb structure a little bit so it was broader in terms of representation. But this pretty much just kind of is an attempt to demonstrate what's really already being done in terms of structure. It's not a lot different than the status quo.
Mr. Chair, I think one of the major concerns that we've heard from people that are on soil water conservation districts and watershed councils is that we don't get enough from the bottom up. So our idea was to use that regional model and then move those people up to the commission level. Currently, GWEB is a commission of agency commissioners. We're looking at really adding to that, enhancing it by having the six local people up there, too. And I think that's a major change.
And if I might follow up with that, I think one of the areas of Senator Ferrioli, in Section 6 of this document, I think for the first time we put forward a collective sense of the principles in a what the Legislative Assembly would declare that the Oregon Plan is designed to do. And let me just kind of roll through those real quickly. I don't think that there is a set of principles, a list of principles and statutes that say things like, establish clear, technically defensible, practicable, and achievable recovery and restoration objectives. That's an example of something that is pretty key for folks like us in the forest management business when you talk about shifting goalposts and knowing where you need to go with your management activities. When you have clear, technically defensible, and achievable recovery and restoration objectives, that's an important important principle for us, and that gets translated in the work that we do in front of the Board of Forestry and what we do down on the ground. There are a number of those kinds of principles involved. Another one, monitoring and ensuring implementation of the integrated action plans and making appropriate changes in action plans and goals as needed. And those are the kinds of principles that help get us the better product and putting it all in one place.
And I guess the question that occurs to me is I think that people, if they are seeing this structure for the first time on paper and realizing there's a lot of complexity into how we deliver systems, products, and funding to the ground, I don't think there's a perception that there's a lot broken. And so I know I'm going to hear from constituents, geez, if it's not broken, why are you trying to fix this? And we did move, it seems like we moved quite a bit of money through the GWEB system onto the ground in a big hurry. I tend to agree that there's a lot more going on in a lot of different areas that is not coordinated. And one of the big criticisms that we keep hearing from people is that we spend a lot of money and haven't got a lot to show for it. And it seems like there's an awful lot of people out there doing an awful lot of stuff, but it doesn't seem to be very well coordinated. I tend to agree that there's a need for coordination. But I guess I'm waiting to hear somebody say, what's in this for the watershed councils and the soil water conservation districts that will pull them into this mode so that they see that there's more benefits in this model than there is under the current system. And one of the things you touched on, that's the relativity of how many people are represented at the decision-making level from watershed councils. But we kind of hopped over that. So I guess I'd like you to go back and focus on that. Under the GWEB model, how many people are currently
in watershed councils that are in the decision-making role on the GWEB board, and how many would there be under this proposed structure?
Senator Perriola, let me answer that in two ways. When we were attempting to do our homework with gathering information from districts and watershed councils, and I'd be the first to admit that our sample of watershed councils has not been as wide as we would have liked and expect to hear more and are wide open for all those that dialogue. We've heard that what's wrong with the system is that there's a lot of competition out there, and we have to write grants just to justify our grant, just to get our grant writers in place. I mean, I'm not articulating that very well. There's a lot of competition out there for the limited dollars, and what we're striving to do with the structure is to try to eliminate some of that competition and provide some certainty. On the structure of developing that input from the ground up, yes, indeed, on the GWEB Commission, there's zero folks that have on-the-ground responsibilities or are involved in these local entities. In this structure, we add specific categories for watershed council and SW and district representation onto this council so that you bring that local knowledge, local, as we call it in golfing, you know, local course knowledge, up to the structure level and have that as a decision point and decision makers.
And I just add that we're now talking about under Measure 66 a lot more dollars than have previously been available in GWEB. So we wanted to make sure they went. We knew where they were going, and they were going in a little more unified fashion. At the same time, I think that, and I don't want to call it a block grant, because block grants assume you will automatically get a big chunk of change, but the commitment to fund watershed action plans with fairly significant dollars that are more than just project-by-project dollars, we think is something that they would find helpful.
I might also respond, Mr. Chair, that we'll see a lot more in the way of federal dollars coming in. Earlier this week, Representative Walden and Representative DeFazio introduced a bill for $25 million for fish screens for the Northwest, in addition to the CREP program, the other programs you're already seeing. And this provides more accountability for that. The other thing is just with the non-voting members pulls together all three branches. We have a member from the Natural Resources Director's Office, the Governor's Office. We have two of the legislators who would be involved as non-voting members, and also federal and state agencies. So it's the one place where everyone comes together on some kind of a regular basis.
You just mentioned the fish screening money that Walton put in. Does that not have a match in it?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson. That is Army Corps funding, and it has 65% grant and 35% match. Many of those project sponsors may provide the match, but also the state may be able to help assist in providing that.
Many of the sponsors provide the match. The state is going to need to put up any idea of what kind of money.
There is a 35% match, Representative Thompson, and that could be the state or the local sponsor or a combination of all of the above. Just has to be a match to the federal government.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Representative.
I wasn't exactly aware of this, but I'm just taking my pencil out and I'm starting to go what it's going to take for match money to get the federal money, and it's looking to be over or right at the 60% right now. And I believe there's another possible pile of money coming into this too. I'm getting, just making it aware of the committee's attention that my calculations are, we're getting pretty close to the amount that's available. Right.
Representative Thompson, the folks that I represent fully intend to pay as much of that 35% themselves as available, and I think that they have planned to do the cost share. However, if state money does become available, it would be helpful and that we could get more on the ground faster.
Representative?
A couple things. One is,
I noticed that there were some deletions or sections there as you went through covering what you had proposed, and I'm starting to read some of those things. I see a whole bunch of those things can disappear, but then it also looks to me like, you know, where there may be some sections where things disappear that you have them putting back in, so it fits better with your language. But it might be helpful, not necessarily right now, but in the next presentation, if you can explain some of your reasons of why you're deleting in one place and where we can find where it might be re-explained or better formulated in another. Otherwise, right, I and maybe a bunch of other people have to go and do that research each independently.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, I've read this morning. I had it written out as I was driving to Salem, and this needs Jeanette Holman, and it is still a very imperfect document. And I guess we never assumed it would be the final document because I think, as you've all said, there are a lot of people who have not seen it. Maybe I can kind of tell you how this group grew, because many of the people I work for would not view themselves as part of the traditional natural resource lobby. I think the net, some of them, not all, but I think they felt the need to kind of get on the same page internally. Once they were relatively organized, they decided to bring us in, and I assume that there are lots of people who haven't seen this, but there are a couple of kind of sentences here that just kind of die with no period, or kind of a couple of little roads to nowhere, which is why Jeanette really needs to look at this. So
I think it might be helpful to at least have some explanation on the causes. If we can go to section A in your legislation panel of the commission, the 13 members, the chair is.
Great reference to this thing.
Thank you. Yes, it's on page 5 in that legislation. That the chair of the commission is jointly appointed by the governor and the speaker and the Senate president. That certainly is kind of unusual, is there?
Actually, if I might answer, I think the co-chairs are appointed in that one.
Okay.
There's a number of people on this committee that had to get approval from both executive and the legislative branch, and in the legislative we asked for legislative leadership, and leadership consulted with the minority party to get those. So it's actually a five-way blessing that we got to get to this process, and this is potentially so impactful to people across the state that I think the broadest possible support was required for the person that would be. We've done it a few times, not often, but it's been a really important
meeting.
IMFC.
I'm happy with that answer. You're happy with that answer.
Yeah, we assume that whoever got this job would want to have everyone's blessing.
Who would want this job?
if you're qualified, why would you take it? And then to follow, if we could go on to subsection it's a D. Hopefully, I can find it myself here. Quickly enough. It had to do with the members subject to the commission members subject to the Senate confirmation. Trying to find my report for it.
Page 6.
Yeah. Oh. And it was the sub 8, that's what I'm looking for there. In the sub 8, we've got 5 of the voting members shall be members of the following boards and commissions designated by the governor. And that we're having members serve who are already on commission. And we're asking them to be. Are we asking them to taking already Senate approved commission member from other commissions, so then goes to a second Senate, you know, confirmation. Well, we're just making sure that we're getting people who've already gone through that.
No, to answer Senator or student co-chairs and Representative King, to answer your question, simply, if we were requiring the commissioners to go through another Senate confirmation, it is a little higher threshold, and we think it's appropriate given the current structure under which the commissioners come to GWEB. A lot of times it kind of boils down to who has the most time available, might have the most interest, and we think that in this kind of commission with this kind of single purpose and importance, that those commissioners also go through the same process that the other commissioners would go through, and we'd have the best of the best.
Just to flip that out a little bit, Chair Representative King, when someone's going through an appointment process for the Environmental Quality Commission, they're not necessarily asked the kinds of questions that if you were just going through this kind of commission, Senate confirmation process, you would. So it's to make sure that there's a general understanding of their views, how they would handle themselves, specifically related to these kinds of issues.
If I could follow up. The reason I ask that is that you were asking people who have already gone through that threshold, and typically these are, you know, pretty outstanding individuals, but that kind of process isn't always just asking good qualification questions. Sometimes they'd be pretty brutal. We're asking for some people to go through an awful lot, and maybe we would lose some quality, you know, by people not willing to subject themselves to that process. And that was a good question.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, there's another point I'd like to point out in subsection 9 on that same page. We actually say that the commission members can only be removed by cause and not at the will of the governor. And if there is a vacancy, it can only be filled if that person is actually appointed and confirmed. So one could not serve beyond the length of their term without that process.
The staff wants to ask the audience, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the audience, first of all, there are copies on the table of this and the markup version of the proposal and the summary of that proposal. So I want to make sure everyone has a copy of that. There are copies available there. I want to make sure who else needs a copy of the rest of the exhibits that show the schematics of the proposal. Are there any other individuals that need a copy at this point? One. Is that all? Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
That's any advantage?
Just to follow up on Representative King's question. Oh, the comment, I guess. I've actually been a member of the committee that interviewed prospective candidates and of various commissions and boards in Oregon, and for an example, a member being reappointed to the Public Utility Commission was asked in a public hearing whether he ever smoked marijuana. That was determined to be a relevant question, I suppose, as to whether or not he was qualified to continue on the Public Utility Commission. So I think because of my experience, I have some concerns about that language, but I wanted to follow that up with some specific questions that, in addition to that, that concern me. For example, the provision, I think it's in section 17, page 11. And on to page 12, specifically that we're talking about the director of the Oregon Watershed Conservation Commission, be authorized to participate, and this is subsection C, be authorized to participate in any proceeding before any public officer, commission, or body of the United States or any state for the purpose of representing citizens of Oregon concerning sand on the watershed, or maybe it needs to happen in West Oregon. It seems to me to be an extraordinary amount of responsibilities for an appointed executive director. Commission was not appointed by the governor. And then to follow that up on the next page, three at the top of page 12, the director may delegate to a member of the commission the exercise of discharge in the director's name of any power, duty, or function, or whatever character vests in or imposed on law by the director. The official act of a person so acting in the director's name and by the director's authority should be considered to be an official act of the director. So I envision a scenario that theoretically could occur where you have a director of this commission not appointed by the governor, who then is asked to be put in an awkward position, testifying maybe in front of some congressional committee about something completely different than what the governor wants, and because this director may be a little concerned, may ask one of the more ardent commission members to do it in his stead. We have this scenario, as outlaid here, where you have a commission member who's been authorized under statute to represent state of Oregon with respect to salmon issues, and the governor sitting right next to him fighting. What's the purpose of that section?
Senator, Representative Waters, my comment. This is actually boilerplate language that that every agency has in terms of the delegation of authority to executive directors. I guess it turns on the question of whether or not this individual is appointed by the governor or not, but this is pretty standard language. When you look at the statutes, and I know you've discussed this or some of you have, most of Oregon's directors or executive directors or agency heads are not appointed by the governor. Some are. If the Board of Forestry, for example, is not appointed by the governor, he speaks on behalf of the state of Oregon in relationship to issues affecting state forest lands. He can give that same authority. He can ask a board member to do that. The political reality is they're members of the executive branch. They coordinate with the other resource agencies. And so one would assume that there was some unanimity and agreement of opinion.
The only distinction, Mr. Chair, if I could follow that up, between that example and this is those have been longstanding commissions that have existed for some decades. This, however, is taking a plan that this governor developed and essentially removing the authority for administrating the plan from the governor that developed it. I'm just curious why that decision was made.
I might ask, Jeanette, would you like to weigh in here?
Let me check. I have a question to answer on this question. Doesn't this commissioner serve at the pleasure of the governor?
No.
Not this one.
Not the commissioner?
The
director?
Director?
No, it's the commission.
So the director works for the commission?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And the commissioners cannot be removed except by cause under this.
Jeanette, would you like to clarify?
Mr. Chair, the general boilerplate language of delegation between a director and an agency is to the staff of the agency. Sometimes a commission is included as part of the agency, but not always.
The language here, section 17, says the director may delegate to any member of the commission the exercise or discharge in the director's name of any power, duty, et cetera. Is that typical? I thought it went the other way around.
Mr. Chair, Senator, did you accept? That's what I was saying. I think it's usually the director of an agency can delegate to an assistant director. I don't recall ever seeing the delegation go the other way.
Mr. Chair, another question for him?
Well, did you get your question?
I did. Thank you. Okay. Can I ask you to address this to
her? We have Senator Turner first. No. Okay.
The question I wanted to ask, Mr. Chairman, is that in this configuration, Representative Leonard asked, why would you remove a executive authority from a governor who, in a sense, created this initiative?
And I've heard it expressed a number of times, and as a matter of fact, co-chairs and meetings with the governor have expressed directly to him a number of times the idea that this iteration, however we move forward on the Oregon Plan of Measure 66, will outlast all the seated legislators and this governor. And so the question that I heard you address earlier about creating a mechanism that is sort of maybe a step removed from the day-to-day political tide. And I gather that that's what this kind of language is aimed at.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I think you said that nicely.
So it's a matter of whether or not that gets past the gag test. And don't remember, I mean, don't let's forget the guy in the middle has to sign the bill. So.
Well, I think I can speak for everybody. When we indicated this is an imperfect document and that we assumed that lots of people, interest groups, the governor, and you obviously would want to
tinker with it.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, where's the severability clause in this document? I have a question for Janet Holman. Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, just to show my new relationship with Oregon
League of Conservation Voters,
like this now. The question was asked of me, and I couldn't answer it, but I hazarded a guess on my layman's ability. Is there a possibility of creating an entity for the administration of a program that exists outside the executive branch? And my answer here was, we have created commissions in the legislative branch. We have one that I can think of, and that's the Commission on Indian Affairs. But that is a state agency, and it's housed in the legislative branch, and that's the only one that I know of. But I did not know how to explain that creating a state agency in the executive downline literally has to be under the control of the executive branch. And I guess the question, to make it clear if I haven't yet, is there a way to create any entity like this one or an agency like this one not in the executive branch?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, I don't think so. The Commission on Indian Affairs is an advisory commission. It is not an administrative or regulatory commission. It's a commission that's established to bring the Native American perspective to the legislature and to the state. And it is not set up to regulate anything. And that's where you get into the problem of an executive versus a legislative issue.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess that brings me to my point. I think to Rick Kendall's question, and for just the information on the committee, I don't think it's possible for us to completely insulate any entity in the state some political influences and some control by the executive branch. No matter how hard we try, we simply cannot undelegate constitutionally delegated responsibilities. And they will, in fact, be delegated to the executive branch if we create this or another entity like this. So I mean, I understand the impulse there, but the reality is this will exist in the executive branch and all the executive authorities so far. And I think we ought to be cognizant of that and not build inconvenient mechanisms.
Attorney Glennis?
Well, I understand the reasoning, the theory, of wanting to insulate the administration of the Oregon Plan from city politics. My opinion is, however, that Oregon is a little different than other states in this respect. While you may have elections around the state that elect, you know, senators and representatives that represent a particular viewpoint, statewide, I don't believe a person can be elected in the state of Oregon to a statewide office who is not concerned about water quality, salmon restoration, and is willing to go to great lengths to achieve those ends, even hurting the feelings of some of the business community to achieve that. So I guess my thought
is... Mr. Chairman, is this a personal confession that we're hearing it, or honestly?
My thought is, to the point of trying to insulate this commission politically, I actually have the opinion that it would be more politically manipulated in the form that we see it in this draft than it would be to be under the direct control of whatever governor of either party. Again, saying that I don't believe anybody in this state can get elected representing a view at one end or the other, that a person who is a statewide elected official, again, from whatever party, is going to do their best to do whatever needs to be done to restore stamina. And I think for that reason, I would want the most direct connection possible to the governor's office from an entity that had these kinds of powers.
With that, I'm going to break this committee for lunch, and we'll recess until 1 o'clock, and we'll take this up again. Thank you.
I'd like to call Kevin Campbell forward, please.
Oh, yes, he did.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts. I had a couple of brief comments to make this afternoon and then wanted to avail myself to answer questions specific to stormwater conservation districts. I have participated in the working group that was earlier before you for about 3 weeks now. And quite frankly, when I come out of the meetings at 9 or 9:30 at night and look around Salem, it seemed to be the one light that was consistently on and people working on this issue over the last 3 weeks. The real basic fundamentals that we have here are a citizens commission that has connection with the ground. I think that is most important. It gets us on the track to where we need to be. It's the vehicle to take us where we need to be in the next 15 years. It's not perfect, but we clearly have to have connectivity between implementation on the ground and policy and decisions that are made at a level much higher than this even. Most of the people in the state of Oregon today are faced with one or both of two things: Clean Water Act restrictions and Endangered Species Act listings. And unless we can reach consensus at the most basic levels and have some action plans and have some activities connected to those plans, then basically all we're going to do is spin our wheels and spend money. Somebody said the other day that the money that the result of Measure 66 is really a minute amount of money, and it is. I see and I hear the number $3 billion bandied about quite a bit. And I can tell you we've come a long, long way while that money was being spent. But we have a long way to go if we're going to continue to deal with listings and Clean Water Act requirements, as well as leaving just a better environment in our own backyards for our children to inherit. The Soil and Water Districts of Oregon are ready to take that step. In the language that was presented to you, I believe that is the basis for districts and watershed councils to collaborate better throughout the state. And those areas where they are collaborating with soil and water conservation districts and watershed councils, I think we have some real strengths. In other areas, they need to collaborate better. We as a state need to be thinking in terms of river basins as well as watersheds and other municipal boundaries. There's another issue that's been brought up about the formation of the commission, and earlier Greg mentioned the fact that counties probably do need to have a role there. I would suggest to you that an 11-person commission is plenty big, but counties, being a former county judge and a former president of the Association of Oregon Counties, really do have a role in that continuum, if you will, between local government, state government, and federal government. And I could easily go along with the idea that the at-large commission position be dedicated to counties.
because I believe that it's only when we have the people that have the resources that are sitting at the table, whether it's here on a commission level in Salem or whether it's out in the Grange Hall where I come from in Eastern Oregon, is that that's when we're going to have something done. It's when I can contribute a little, you can contribute a little, and we may not agree on everything, but at least we can set some priorities and get something done. The other basic concept that's included here is right now, it was talked about earlier, we have too many people that are writing grants to keep themselves employed. Out where I come from, I want to see us hire technicians, engineers, and implementers, not grant writers. Because in the future, what we really need to be doing is we need to be putting our people in very rural parts of the state back to work. Unemployment in my county is currently running at almost 20%. And I think it's that way in many rural counties around the state. Not all of those people can become grant writers, but many of them can run heavy equipment and can do things that would be positive benefits to the state. So having some money with some certainty to it that goes back to the watersheds and the basins in the state and can be distributed between watershed councils and soil water conservation districts, but also can be leveraged to bring in broader money so that when somebody comes to the door and says, I need some technical assistance, their lights are on, an office is open, they can provide the technical assistance, it'll fit into a comprehensive plan for the basin, and there may even be a little bit of money together that if the person has some money, it can be invested wisely rather than just going out and finding out that they can't hire an engineer or they don't have adequate funds to do what they wanted to do. We have to reach down and get in non-traditional players to the table, and I believe that this provides a mechanism to do it. I would like to go back to my membership around the state, knowing that we're talking about something that is represented in the proposal that was put together by the coalition, and then get back to you with some technical corrections. But I believe this provides a good platform to address those issues that are fundamental to many of us.
Evan, I have a couple questions for you. How many soil and water districts have tax bases?
One.
How many soil and water districts are partially funded by counties?
I believe all of
them. How many are not would be easier to count?
Yeah, I don't know of any of the 45 soil and water conservation districts in the state that don't get a small amount of money from counties, and that's primarily because that small contribution leverages a larger amount from the state.
And they also get office space on all of them that most of them didn't get?
Well, not anymore because of the downsizing of what used to be FCS and is now NRCS and the cutbacks at the federal level. If they are sharing office space, the districts are now paying for it when it was traditionally free. And indeed, in some towns like Fossil and Wheeler County, there isn't even an NRCS in the county anymore.
Okay. Any questions? What's in the plan and then turn it
in? Yeah, in my understanding of earlier testimony was that we did want to have money, when we talked about the districts, we wanted to have money going to the highest priorities and needs. We have representation to do that. And I just don't need to have money go direct to the water councils and the districts direct, and that eliminates the grant process. But I have some concerns about how we would be able to get to the most competitive projects, the highest needs, if we don't have, grant projects versus we did all the money in direct, then it would kind of be doled out and then everybody would spend it within their area.
Representative King, I do believe that there is a need to have a statewide competitive grant process into the future. And there is a need and the ability to leverage those monies at the state level in a very efficient way. We don't need 15 or 20 different grant processes run by multiple agencies at the state level, but we do have to have some certainty at the local level that staff will be there for longer than just 6 to 18 months. 10 years ago, the Soil and Water District of Oregon had a total of 25 employees around the state. At the present time, there's about 175 people employed by Soil and Water Conservation Districts, and another 35 to 40 that are employed by watershed councils. And the one thing you can say about all of those individuals out at the local level is their certainty of continuing funding is almost non-existent. You can't have good projects unless you have good people that are accessible to help put them together. And there's no reason to have good people sitting around unless you have some money to put projects on the ground.
I assume that you see the Soil and Water Conservation District as providing the technical assistance that you were talking about.
That is correct. And largely because traditional providers of technical assistance are no longer available or present or funded. And that is even more drastic in the more rural parts of the state. And I come from the John Day Basin, as most of you know. And we have some pretty precious runs of wild fish that we'd like to be able to protect. But you can't do that if you're protecting. It's bad enough to try to protect both salmon and bull trout, who are known to eat each other. But then when you have to work with National Marine Fisheries and the Fish and Wildlife Service with two different sets of rules, and you're trying to do that with a volunteer board, technical assistance is a pretty comprehensive way of looking at things. For the average individual that wants to do the right thing, they need to have a guide, if you will, to lead them through not only the technical side of getting projects done, but the bureaucratic side of getting projects done and in place.
You see this as another funding source for soil and water?
It has been a traditional funding source for soil and water conservation districts. GWEB has been very, very good to us, and I believe we have been good for GWEB. The one piece that I would like to see come into the equation is some certainty, which is spelled out in, I believe, it's Section 22, Sub 7 of the proposed language.
Where the money comes directly.
Right.
In those areas where you said there was not, there needed to be a better working relationship between the Watershed Council and the Soil and Water Conservation District. Can you be more specific about what the difficulties seem to be?
Well, I think that any time you have local elections, as we do with Soil and Water Conservation District, the entire state is represented by officials that are elected around the state. And certainly watershed councils are formed as largely volunteer organizations, and we're dealing with folks that are going to a lot of meetings already. And sometimes the most difficult thing we can do is to get together and collaborate in areas where there's traditionally been some conflict. You know, I come from Grant County. I refer to that as the land of long ropes and nervous horses. Literally, there's people that have not always gotten along on certain issues. Some may be elected to one organization, some may be appointed to another organization. However, when people are able to put down the differences and able to strategize and think what's best rather than competing with each other for finite resources, start strategizing for the long term, we've found that the collaborative relationships have been very, very positive. There are always going to be turf battles on this or any other issue, and I think you're always going to find those in the more rural parts of the state. However, we need to get beyond that if we're going to solve the bigger problems of protecting salmon and cleaning up our waters.
What I was trying to get at is, and I took from your testimony that you believe that one of the things we can achieve by putting watershed councils and soil and water on an equal footing, and that they're both part of the decision-making at the local level, was that in areas where they're not really working together now, we could make that happen. And I wondered just what the problems were in those areas that we had to overcome to get them there.
Well, I personally come from an area that we do get along pretty well. But, and I think we can all hear horror stories where someone else doesn't get along with your particular organization, depending on how you're looking at it. But the real piece that I see us needing at the present time are incentives that reinforce positive actions rather than a single competitive grant process with someone from above deciding who's right and who's wrong.
I think we can really reinforce positive action and think in terms of watersheds and basements in the future using some of the language that's been in place and the suggested changes, rather than the idea that I'll agree to collaborate with you today, but I know that both you and I are dependent on a single grant program that comes to end July 1, and so we're writing competitive grants, and one of us may be funded and another one may not. And that's the harsh realities in various parts of the state today.
I have a couple of questions to follow on this, Attorney Thompson, and I'll get to you. It's been my observation in my years, first when I was on the commission as well as on soil and water districts, that there's a lot of districts over the years that really just didn't have a lot going on. For years they didn't have a lot going on, and so they really didn't get the leadership and get the involvement and get moving. But my guess is that you've seen that change considerably in the last 10 years, probably 5 years, and that there's probably very few soil and water districts that aren't, well, back in those days when they didn't have much to do, they weren't staffed, and not even a clerk, except for a volunteer basis. And so it's very difficult to get organized and take a responsible role in the community. I would think that has changed. But what I wanted to get from you, Kevin, is that I believe it's still valid that soil and water districts, if they choose, are authorized to review every permit within their jurisdiction. Natural resource tax permit, at least. I don't believe that they're required or have the authority to review applications for grants that are going on in their district. And I'm not saying that they should have veto power, but it would seem to me it would help tie this thing together if they at least had the authority that they could request to review the applications. Have you had any discussions along those lines?
I'm not at this point, Representative Messerly. However, I do agree with you, and I believe the discussions around our group as we were working on proposed changes to 3225 were that we need to migrate more, we as Oregonians need to migrate more to a model similar to what they have in the state of Nebraska, where the individual water basins of the state or river basins of the state basically work as a unit. And right now we have 36 counties, we have 45 soil and water conservation districts, we have 80 different watershed councils, and not all of those cover the entire state. So if we can think in terms of the 17 river basins in the state of Oregon, and we and the John Day start working together towards some longer term visions of what the value and integrating our plans better at the watershed level, it makes a lot more sense than simply trying to figure out, you know, where the jurisdiction of the monument district ends and the grant district begins, or the watershed council's overlay onto that doesn't necessarily look the same when it covers three different counties.
And the unusual situation of not only having Yanhill County, the one that's the most active in the base, at 4 precincts in the area, but I have Lincoln County, which is probably the least one. I don't know that much about water conservation districts. I'm not an expert. It's not been an area that I've had a huge amount of time in. But in Lincoln County, we've worked fairly well together in one of the watershed basins. But if I understand right, to be a member of it, you have to be on 10 acres, and you have to be in the agriculture industry to be involved in soil and water districts. Is that right, or am I said wrong?
In the state of Oregon, there is a statute that a majority of the board members, on some it's 3 out of 5, on others it's 4 out of 7. Boards are made up of 5 or 7 district representatives, that land ownership or management of, I believe it's 15 acres or more, is considered as a criteria. That isn't true in all states. That has been discussed at the state level of the state of Oregon at various times of changing it. And certainly I know that Representative Cruz worked on that issue in the past, and I would certainly be interested in talking with you in the future.
Mr. Chair, I want a clarification on that. That isn't actually true, because we did change it. Two of a 7-member board, which most are who are at large positions, and they can be just residents of the district. And the other five have to reside within a zone, and they either have to own or manage a minimum of 10 acres or have a completed and approved conservation plan. Now, if you don't own land and you want to do a conservation plan for a city park or something like that, that wouldn't qualify. So it isn't specifically land ownership.
You can see my problem, though, where I have virtually no agriculture community. I mean, we have some, but it's minimal. It's just along a few rivers, and there's not very many. I have mostly forest land in Lincoln County, which is the bulk of my district. And virtually, I mean, it's two or three farmers that have to be on the board that would own 15 acres. Some of those, I don't think there's even a 15-acre one. I mean, I've got problems in that district to even qualify any members under the rules, and yet you're asking them to have an equal basis with my watershed councils, which my watershed councils have 60, 70 members from all walks of life. And I'm having a little trouble struggling here because I have one that has a tremendously good, well, I have good soil water district, even with the limited size, but I mean, there's an inequality in both Yamhill County and Lincoln County on opposite sides.
The further clarification of that would be that the rules as to who is eligible to sit on a watershed district board is in state statute. It isn't up to the association to do that. The legislators make those rules. So if we wanted it open to all citizens, all we'd have to do is change the statute.
Can I go one further? You can see the dilemma in Lincoln County. It's developed here, and my farm community, I mean, they're excellent farmers, and they're excellent involved in watershed council, but I have such a limited number of people.
Also, Representative Thompson, that is not just ag people that own land. It can be any kind of timber landowners or anyone. So.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was strictly ag
people. No, landowners.
Representative King, and then we need to get moving on this afternoon.
When did we create the districts in the state, soil water conservation districts? What was the original legislation for that?
The soil water conservation districts were created throughout the United States as a following the Depression as part of the Dust Bowl. They were viewed as implementing agents for federal programs. So there would be a local representation from the ground up. I believe Representative Messerly has a listing, but I believe the first district in the state of Oregon was formed in the early 1940s. And my hometown, Monument, Oregon, chose to form a soil and water conservation district in 1942. I believe they were the third in the state to do it. And so we've had districts formed in Oregon from the early 40s to as late as, I believe, the 1960s and 70s, and there's been a large amount of consolidation that has gone on throughout time in those districts. The boundaries have not always been as they are today, nor do I suspect they'll be that way in the future.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Do
you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin, could you just kind of, in a capsulated form, kind of describe the concept of cost-share program for the committee?
Absolutely. Representative Cruz, thank you for the question, and also thank you for the previous answer. I appreciate your help on that. The cost share is something that has generally come from federal programs and has traditionally been aimed at production agriculture. Because of what Representative Thompson mentioned, the change in Oregon, and it's throughout Oregon, many people don't have any idea where they go to gain technical assistance or where they go to gain some assistance to do something that would benefit water quality or salmon. They may own 20 or 30 acres of grapes. They may own a Christmas tree, a small lot of Christmas trees, or I have 5 acres of dahlias in Clackamas County is a pretty good example of myself. And the real issue that we have is access, but also when a person comes in the door and says, I've been wanting to do something with my stream, I have $2,000 or $3,000 in hand. Can you help me with it? The idea that a amount of money would be available within each basin of the state, and that's not necessarily now, but in the future, that could say, sure, if you have $2,000, we have a program that you can match it, and you'll implement something that's consistent with a basin-wide plan, rather than the idea, which I have seen in Clackamas County in the last 3 years, of the water in the Footing River came up, flooded a certain area of land. I drive by, and there's people putting car bodies and refrigerators along the bank of the Footing River to protect it. You know, those are pretty old practices where I come from, and I don't think they should be tolerated in this state much longer.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it. Lucy Labonte.
Good afternoon. Sheriff Naturally Carioli and members of the committee. My name is Lucy Labonte, and I'm chair of the South Coast Coordinating Watershed Council, the council that coordinates efforts on watersheds in Curry County. Today, I'm also representing the Lower Rogue Watershed Council and the Curry County Soil and Water Conservation District. Now I'm going to go into this because the last time I spoke, I had the feeling that people thought I was speaking for me. But actually, I'm speaking for the folks represented on the nine councils, which include South Coast Timber, Olympic Timber Resource Group, Port of Brookings Harbor, Port of Gold Beach, Port of Port Orford, City of Gold Beach, City of Brookings, Town of Agnes, City of Port Orford, Harbor Water District, Curry County, South Coast Fishermen, Curry Anadromous Fish, Freeman Rock Enterprises, Legal Women Voters of Curry County, Independent Commercial Fishermen, which are highly involved in our watershed process, Independent Ranchers, Small Woodlot Owners, RV Park Owners, students from three Curry County School District, educators, U.S. Forest Service, and Bureau of Land Management. Those are just the ones that on the list, just going over them real briefly, knowing I had like half a day to get it together, I got off the list. And this includes citizens from all over our county. They would all like to be here today, but they're sending me instead and would like me to thank the committee for this opportunity to speak about this important presentation.
Dr. Hughes, you said you were speaking. So you're speaking for Forest Service, BLM, and Curry County?
The ones that they are represented on our watershed councils, and they're all aware of basically the information, and that we all discussed this issue at our watershed council meeting, and they had no objections to us coming forward in support of what I'm about to say we're in support of. That's how we work. We're consensus in the area there. Is there anybody here that objects to what we're doing? The coalition of groups, cities, districts, and citizens concur also with the Rogue River Coordinating Council that represents folks in three counties, and I think on Watershed Day, a lot of those folks spoke. They had a meeting over in at Grants Pass of the Rogue Coordinating Council, and that's where they all decided that they support the GWEB process that we're now discussing under the amendments and with some adjustments under the amendments of House Bill 325. We support the name change, establishing the Oregon Natural Resources Office with the governor as the CEO. That's how I had it explained to me. But also with having a legislative oversight. And we agree with the expansion of the GWEB board and the name change to OWEB. And we agree with the use of the consensus process when possible. And in fact, one of the things I wanted to address was there was someone here this morning from this coalition that suddenly formed in the past 3 weeks to do something that we've all been working on for about 2 years. That said, there were no representatives on the GWEB board that were council members, and Wayne Kruger, who's forestry representative, sits on Lower Rogue Council and also does a lot of the on-the-ground projects for that council. There's also a lady by the name, from what I understand, by the name of Patricia Dainsworth, who sits on Soil Water Conservation District Board and the Watershed Council. So I think there are a couple of GWEB board members that do sit on councils, and Wayne Kruger was the one that brought up the suggestion of using the consensus process on that board. It came directly from him at one of our watershed council meetings, and we said, hey, how do you think the web board should be changed, or should it be changed? And restoration actually began in our area in the 1960s, and there has never really been as comprehensive a statewide system just restoration as there is in place now. The soil water conservation districts include agriculture. Then Steph included recreational and commercial fishers, so working with hatch foxes and all those good things that they found out about from British Columbia. When the watershed council was expanded, that included more folks. That was the whole purpose. That was Bill Bradbury's purpose of working on watershed councils at that time. And actually, he went over this history for us not too long ago at a watershed council meeting I had, because some of the stuff people didn't understand. They thought watershed councils were coming in to take over their work, and he said, no, 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 it's to expand on it. So we had Bill Bradbury come down to explain that, since he started the STEP, was one of the ones that started the STEP program. We believe that the system under GWEP has been fair, and I brought with me today a list of how much money went to each council. I know everybody always says, oh, Curry County, they got a lot of money. We got $47,960, according to this, between 1997 and 99 biennium, and it looks like Umpqua got $141,316, Coos got $81,000, so forth and so on. So, and I said to somebody, you know, that's because what we've been striving for, and I think it's something that Senator Ferriola brought out at a meeting in Danden, the concept was you're going to get some money in the beginning, but you have to start looking for other sources of money. So what we do is we take our seed money from GWEB and we match it with either foundation money or federal grant money and work on it that way, or local money. There's a lot of times there's local money on projects. So that, and that's the ideal and beauty of this whole system. We do have regional technical committees that review all the grants. And I kind of felt that some of the folks here speaking today don't quite understand how this grant process works. What we do is we talk amongst the council, you know, who's got projects, what kind of things need to be done. We look in our action plan. We were required by the state in the early watershed process to do an action plan and a watershed assessment. We're in the process right now of redoing that. We look in there to see what areas really need work and which would be the most beneficial for the fish. Those ideas go to our coordinators who start working with the landowners to see if they're willing to buy into the project. And then once those grants are written, they go to this technical committee, which involves folks, I believe, from Coos and Curry right now, including some of the agricultural people that sit on Soil Water Conservation District and work with them. They all review these grants, and then the ones that really look like they will be good for the fish go on to the GWEB board with recommendations, good, bad, ugly, you know, whatever. So that's kind of how that whole process works, and we think that's a pretty good process. It is competitive, but I think it works because it's based on what those assessments say, and those are required to have those assessments. The assessments are done both sides. Right now we have a professional hired to do an assessment, but it's also, he goes to the watershed council and says, okay, folks, you want to go tributary by tributary of your watershed and see what really needs, you know, go and walk the water and see what needs to be done out there. And they come back with recommendations, and then it goes, you know, compare it with ODFW, and we have a lot of federal land, see what the Forest Service wants and so forth. So that's how those assessments are done, and that's a very important thing because National Marine Fisheries Service wants the whole process looking at watersheds as a whole. And not only do they want that, they want long-term monitoring programs in place. And I did hear the group this morning say that there would be some short-term monitoring. That's not going to cut it when it comes to delisting species. And in Curry County, for coho, we're trying to get them delisted. Right now, we're still trying to prevent the listing of steelhead and chinook. But we're trying to delist species. And so we're really following what NIMS is trying to tell us. And such a difficult time. We really don't think we need to increase the regional aspect. That was how the experimental pilot project was that we were part of and that was established by the 1993 legislature. And it had more regional bureaucracy, and a lot of us felt that a lot of the money kind of got lost somewhere. And so we went to the 1995 legislature and said, why don't you cut back some of the administration of this and have this money go directly to the ground? And we really felt they did. They actually cut the money back, too, but they just streamlined the process to what we have now. And that's one reason we like that this present process. This process is low cost, and it has a good coordination between the different links from the ground up to the state level. I think that's really important. We do have some regional technical people that also help. That's why this regional concept really kind of bothers us. And that's the best way I can put it. It bothers us a lot because we're afraid the money's going to all of a sudden get gummed up somewhere. I know there's a lot of statewide groups. I was told yesterday, actually, there are a lot of statewide groups that also would like to use this money, and their concern is maybe the watershed process won't work for them. But I kind of quoted what Senator Ferrioli said about state agencies getting money at one of the meetings I came to, was basically all they have to do is put what watershed councils they're working with on their application, and they can access the money, and that's no problem at all. The whole idea behind that is because we're back to that watershed approach, that watershed-based approach. And if we all know what's going on and what projects are going on, instead of people piecemealing projects here for this group and piecemealing for that group, then we'll have this whole picture, and that's the whole purpose of that. I also have a concern with regional boards because I sat on Coos Curry Douglas Regional Strategies Board for several years. Curry County did really well at first because at first we had no rating system at all, and we had this great team, and we just go up and yell and scream and get lots of money. But then Douglas County kind of got a little jealous, so they said, hey, we need to set up a point rating system. That took 3 years to set up that process of a fair system. And it is. It's a fair system now, but it took 3 years to set it up, and that's something that worries me with just all of a sudden the whole system's broke and we need to rewrite it, because how long is it going to take for that new system to get up and running when we already have had a system we've all been working under for 2 years just up and running? The other concern I have about regional things is Curry County is in a whole lot of different regions. We're part of evolutionary significant units that include parts of California, portions of Oregon, depending on what species we're talking about. We're part of a coastal region extending from Eureka to Astoria. That's for fish management purposes. Sometimes we're from Bodega Bay to Astoria. We're part of a region including Josephine and Jackson County. ODOT, I believe, includes those counties. And we're part of a region that includes Coos and Douglas for other funding. And sometimes we're part of a region that includes Klamath County. So having funding decisions made by regions is not really practical for our county. I think there were just a couple of all these notes that I took this morning. Curry County Soil Water Conservation District has not received funding from Curry County for several years. As soon as the ONC timber revenue started disappearing, so did that money. I think they gave some in-kind equipment last year, Curry Soil Water Conservation District. So that's a county that's not funding a Soil Water Conservation District. And I did ask Mike Knapp when I talked to him last week, I said, am I right by saying that all watershed councils shouldn't have to work with their Soil Water Conservation Districts? It works here, but what do you think about that? He says he thinks it should be flexible and there should be a choice.
Okay. Thank you, Lucy. Representative Cruz?
Yeah. How many watershed in this group how many watershed councils altogether in this group you're kind of speaking for?
In Curry County, we have 9 altogether. We have one that coordinates the efforts on 7, and then we have the lower rogue that's part of the rogue coordinating council.
Okay.
And they all got together a couple of weeks ago at a meeting, and they wanted to, and I think they sent you guys letters in support of this process we're under now.
They all have watershed coordinators.
Some of them do, some of them don't. In Curry County right now, we just have the one for the coordinating council that coordinates for seven, you can call them sub-councils, Chetco and Winchuck, all those. And then we have a coordinator for the lower rogue, so we have two. At times, that position's only, the lower rogue's only been a half-time position. So we have two coordinators, really, for nine councils.
Okay, and are those GWAR-funded positions?
They were part-time. Part-time, they were funded by For the Sake of Salmon. Currently, yes. Currently, they do get GWAR funding. I have advised them to start looking at other places because I had a feeling that once, you know, more folks come into the system, even though there's more money, we'll probably be getting less.
Okay, so you do have somewhat of a vested interest in the status quo of the system we currently have.
I think the biggest vested interest is that we've been, all these groups that I've talked about, the ports and the cities in Curry County, have been working in the development of the Oregon Plan, and we've been working with National Marine Fisheries Service. We even had Will Fell down to our county at one point to discuss this with him. And I guess we've been under the listing a little bit longer than the rest of the folks, except for maybe Umpqua and the Cutthroat. So we've been really kind of trying to work with National Marine Fisheries Service a little bit there. And so we really work, as we worked on the Oregon Plan, we also have been looking at what's going to be needed to delist. And so those are the type of things we think that the system really does address.
Representative Chris, I'm not sure if you intended the question you did, but Lucy Labonte is not a coordinator. She is president of the council. So when you said vested interest, did you mean personally? Or
She was speaking not as a person, but as a representative. So that was how I was addressing the question. One more follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I guess let me just finish the point I'm trying to make, then, is that all Watershed Council has vested interest in this legislation.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not debating that. The interest is if it's in the system in general or maintaining the system specifically as it exists because of the funding streams that have been established. The other follow-up would be if we did go to a system where, for example, we were funding a watershed coordinator per county, would that have a negative impact on you?
I think the only difficult thing is right now, because we've had two people in this position that coordinates for seven councils. The first one was John Wilson, who is a commercial fisherman. And John really burned out because it's a long county. Our county's 100 miles long. And with seven councils and going to seven meetings a month, et cetera, it's a lot for one person. So what we did was the lower rogue coordinator sometimes helped assist that South Coast coordinator, and sometimes that person will do a little bit of work on the rogue to kind of help. We really wanted an assistant coordinator for that coordinating council position because it really is a little bit too much for one person to handle. So maybe I could say that you could probably go to county-wide coordinators if they had at least one assistant or something. You have to look at the size of the county and how many watersheds are in it and things like that. And they keep telling me that the other reason they're able to do it is because I'm a very active chair, and I do a lot, like coming up here. That's one of the reasons that they feel that they can still function this way, because I do make all the agendas for the meeting, and I get the speakers for the meetings and do some of the things that they really don't have time for. I did a little bit of grant writing at one point for them. I do want to point out, too, because there was a point made that our coordinators are just grant writers. Ours are not. Dr. Follinsky did testify on Watershed Day. He has his doctorate in wetlands and his master's in forestry. So these people that we have hired as coordinators all along have been highly technical people, and grant writing is kind of a second thing. But it's the soil water conservation districts basically that have stressed that they want grant writers in those positions.
But what I'd like to do is we have two more people signed up, and Lucy, you said you would stick around until the end of the meeting. If we have further questions, I want to make sure that these folks that have been here all day have raised hands.
Great, Carl.
Thank you, Lucy. Appreciate you coming all the way up.
Mr. Chair, while he's coming up, if I could say a reminder from staff that I did not mean to impugn that the representative of our group is not a person, because indeed there would be.
Chair Messerly and committee members, my name is Eric Carlson. I am the coordinator of the Clackamas River Basin Council. That means I get paid by them to do a whole lot of things. I'm the sole staff. I take minutes at meetings. I create the minutes. I prepare applications to become a 501c3 organization. I assist with plans for assessments. I help our Fish and Wildlife Committee try to get restoration projects on the ground, and generally keep the council, assist the council members to have a functioning council. My council operates in the way a number of councils do, and that is they're young enough that they don't entirely have a good set of relations among each other, a good free feeling for how much they agree. And so whenever anybody speaks on behalf of that council, they're required basically to get advance approval for every word. So as a coordinator, I am here today to tell you two things on behalf of my council. One is that they approve of the expansion of the Watershed Enhancement Board from 5 members to 11 or some number with the addition of public members. They think that would be a good deal. They're not convinced that the provision requiring a consensus approach will be workable for a variety of reasons connected with their own experience. I would like to second Lucy Labonte's comment. My council generally thinks that GWEB is working as it is today, that it is doing a good job. They are responsive to us when we ask for information, when we ask for assistance. We think that their grant-making process has been fair, and I say that coming from a council whose first couple of requests for grants were turned down. I do have a couple other things I want to say, so I need to make it clear that I'm now speaking as a private citizen who just happens to have some prior experience with a watershed council. Some of my prior experience includes working in this building, so I have a little sense of how the legislative process works. With regard to sections 1 and 7 of your -2 amendments that create an Oregon Office of Natural Resources, that office is built on a non-statutory position. The governor's natural resources advisor is a non-statutory position, and presumably a future governor could arrange his office so that there was not a natural resources advisor. You would then have created a statutory office headed by a position that no longer existed, and you might want to think about language in the statute that would take care of that problem. Something that at least says the governor's natural resource advisor is now a statutory position and the governor has to have one. Or maybe simply saying the governor shall appoint the director of the Oregon Natural Resources Office without specifying that it has to be a natural resources advisor, so that you get a statutory basis for the director of the office. The other comment that I wanted to make about the -2 amendment is that I think you need to, in Section 8 on the issue of designating a single agency, you need to distinguish between the account, the Parks and Natural Resources account, and the two sub-accounts. You are required to create a single agency for the account. You are not required to create a single agency for the sub-account. You currently have DAS as the single agency for the account, all the funds that come in from Measure 66. You then have DAS as the administrator of the Restoration and Protection sub-account, and I think that's what I heard the folks from GWEB and from the governor's office saying this morning was that you've got the money flowing from DAS back into DAS, which is then going to administer the dollars. I think what you probably ought to think about doing is having the funds flow into DAS. The ones from parks currently presumably flow, or for parks, presumably flowed into the parks department. And there's no mention of that in here. There's this asymmetry then where the sub-account flows back to DAS, and when they were saying that they have really good working relationship with WRD, Water Resources, you ought to think about having that be the responsible agency for the sub-account. And I think that would resolve this issue of a single agency for the count and an effective agency for the sub-account. There are a couple of things I've heard today that I'd like to comment on. I'll probably not to take more than a couple of minutes. Representative King said early that this is a big change that you're looking at here and you may not be able to accomplish it this year. I would like to second that. From my experience here, I know it takes a lot of time to work out details, not only to get agreement on policy, but then to make sure that it is technically correct, that the bill, in fact, will do what you intend it to do. My understanding is that your timeline is to be done with this by about April 30th. I would be surprised if you could put this all together, both from a policy point of view and then have it be technically workable in that time. And so I would hope you would take what I took to be Representative King's advice and think about whether you want to do all of this right now or whether a good deal of the restructuring can be put off for review by the interim so that you're sure you get lots of people involved and you're sure you get it technically right. I appreciated Representative Thompson's observation of those of us who were sitting out in the audience looking really puzzled about what was going on this morning. We did not, in fact, have access to the material. Representative Leonard asked whether all the groups were involved, and there are basically two answers to that. The first is, who can tell? Because we didn't get a list of all the groups that participated in the Natural Resources Working Group, and in the material that your committee administrator handed out, that list was not there. Now, Greg Miller, is it, read from some kind of a list of groups who were involved. That was not in the material that Ms. Callen handed out, so I still don't know, other than remembering a couple of groups who was involved there. But the second answer is that watershed councils were not involved as a group. There may have been one or two people who happened to serve on watershed councils who were part of that group, but watershed councils across the state basically have heard nothing about the Natural Resources Group proposals. And have had no opportunity to think about it and probably won't have much in the next couple of weeks. And much of that is a resource issue. Most of us are new organizations. We are struggling for dollars. Most of the people on them are people who are new to the public process. They do not understand much about the legislative process. Many of them do not understand the need to put resources into a statewide organization. We need to build that. And basically what we need from you folks is the acknowledgement that it's okay for watershed councils to put some amount from their budgets into a statewide organization the way, for example, SWCDs do. They use tax money that they get from the Department of Agriculture or other groups to build a statewide organization so they can hire Kevin Campbell to be here to have a presence.
And Ms. Carlson, that's any money?
I think that this committee would be very interested in your watershed council and receive also input on this proposal that came up today. But I would like to ask you, I know that you can't speak for your council, but based on your own personal experience, do you think that it would be beneficial for the watershed council system in the state to be represented on a statewide commission that
deals with the Oregon plan? Yes, I do. But that doesn't mean that I think that the plan that was presented this morning by the Natural Resources Working Group is the right one. Okay, I mean,
I'm just thinking in kind of broad philosophical terms, whether that would help the watershed council system in the state to strengthen.
By itself, no. it would help because it would help increase the voice of watershed councils in terms of coordination with other agencies and in getting resources. Solving this problem is not going to be done solely with volunteer energy. It's going to take some resources. And if watershed councils have a voice on this kind of a group, it can help with that issue.
I'd like to clarify, Mr. Carlson. I just checked with Cindy Cruz. I believe this is true, that some water districts do not use state money to fund the OECD. They use their own funding, which can come from several sources, but there's not a direct stream of funding from the state.
Right. I understand that, but state funding is part of what supports them, and then they pay dues to OECD, as I understand it.
But they have other sources.
They do have other sources of funding, and watershed councils hope to get there. Most of the SWCDs have a longer history and more experience at getting other funds than councils do.
I have a related question. Is there a statewide organization of watershed councils?
There is not. There is not. Some of us are interested in getting that going, but that is an issue not only of dollar resources, but of time resources. Coordinators need to have time to work together, and one or two representatives from each watershed council need to have time then to get together and work together.
And I just want to point out that the co-chair and I have invited all aspects of stakeholders, all the different groups, from fishermen to whatever, to get your thoughts together and get back to us. So I don't know. You know, in a case where you're not organized, I don't know how we can do that, although I do know that GWEB, you know, has been involved in this and has been somewhat representing the approach, and I assume it's been...
Well, I understand that you can't wait entirely for us to get organized. I guess my point is that we have a set of circumstances here where you want to make sure that there's better coordination with state agencies, and you want to make sure that state funds are well spent. And we are young organizations that are still trying to figure out how to operate locally. And then when you put trying to figure out how to operate at the state level on top of that, it makes it difficult for us. We will do the best we can, but 2 weeks is going to be hard. The only other point that I guess I would make has to do with the relationships between SWCDs and watershed councils. Some of them work together very well. Some of them don't. And often the reason they don't is that they are coming at issues from different perspectives about what's important. I think it's interesting that at least some of you are talking about changing the way in which SWCDs are selected. If that happens, it will probably be easier for SWCDs and watershed councils in areas like mine to work together. But in Clackamas County, SWCD has historically been an agricultural organization exclusively, and it is taking them a while to change that perspective, just as it's taken us a while both to learn how to work together, to work with other agencies, and to figure out what our role is in things. But I think that there needs to be some give and take on both sides of this, not only by watershed councils, but also by SWCDs.
Mr. Carlson, what is the balance on your watershed council?
You mean in what terms of what groups are represented?
And particularly on the executive council, the voting balance.
We have 21 members. They are what we call stakeholder groups, and the representative from each of those groups is selected by the stakeholder group with no input from the council at all. So a stakeholder group, for example, is Fish and Wildlife Interests, which is Oregon Trout, Northwest Steelheaders group, about 20 groups like that. Federally recognized Native American tribes and the Forest Service and BLM, local government agencies, cities and counties, basically, small woodlot owners. Small woodlot owners select their stakeholder with no input from the council. Private industry, retail businesses, water providers, education and youth groups, as I say, 21 of them with this broad set of interests in the basin.
I think I get the gist. Are all of those bodies, are they voting members?
Yes.
So the government agencies can vote right along with the landowners. They all have a equal participation.
They all have equal participation. There are four of the 21 seats represent government agencies. The Forest Service BLM has one because they own two-thirds of the basin. Cities and counties have one because of their interest in what goes on in the basin. The water providers, which is districts and cities that have water departments, take water from the Clackamas, and then special districts, including SWCDs and some other of the special districts like the sanitary sewer district, have the fourth seat. The other 17 seats are private entities.
And Commander, I just want to point out that that's not uniform for all districts.
Right.
Some of them, the government bodies do not have votes. So.
Right. And some of them there's a higher proportion of on the bodies. Some councils, the members are selected by the SWCD. You go through the SWCD to get on. It doesn't work that way.
Mr. Carlson, I've found out I've got two more people to testify, so I'm not trying to cut you off. I just want you to get your...
Those are all my comments. I'd be happy to answer further questions, and I'll stick around until the hearing is over.
Okay.
I appreciate your willingness to meet on a Saturday so that those of us who work a 16-hour day on Thursday and an 8-hour day yesterday could get down here.
Well, I appreciate your willingness to come in on Saturday as well. That is very early.
I was just feeling this wave of appreciation coming from you. Maybe it wasn't appreciation.
I did not. It was optional.
Chairman, the question I have is, how do watershed councils communicate with each other?
Occasionally. In the metropolitan area, there is a brown bag lunch once a month. Our coordinators get to talk about issues that are of interest to the metropolitan watershed. There are probably six or seven of us on a regular basis. My understanding is that in the South Willamette Valley, there are occasionally meetings like that. Anywhere from 2 to 4 times a year, the coordinators in the Willamette Valley get together under the organizational ability of Vivian Torgerson at GWIB. We recently set up an email listserv, which I barely know what that word means, except that we can talk to each other easily. You just push one button instead of having to hit a whole list of folks. But some of us are still learning how to use that. I'm a technological dinosaur, and I still haven't entirely figured that out. But that's about it. We don't have newsletters. We don't have an annual convention yet. Some of us think that's important and we need to get there, but we're still working on it.
Mr. Chairman, I think there does need to be some kind of a mechanism for watershed councils to share ideas and cross-pollinate. And this particularly would be an opportunity to get at least a test on how many folks can get the proposals that the committee's working through and get meaningful input into the process. It's going to be really important. 85 different entities spread all over the state with no formalized mechanism for communication.
And not all of them, I will say, on email. So I'm not sure how many of the 85 are part of this coordinator's listserv that can easily communicate, you know, by computer.
Okay. Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you.
Mr. Post, would you like to come up? And I want to apologize, you came barely while you were coming up, Mike, but Ken, I didn't realize you had prepared testimony today. You were not on my sign-up sheet, or I would have had some material. Really? On the ones I've received, I have not seen your name. There was one that you were on, but it was marked off. No, I don't know.
Did that person came alive?
I didn't do it.
What a good idea. Mike, go ahead, then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm Mike Pope, Polk County Commissioner, and I would like to thank the committee for a meeting today. I got up this morning, and my wife had this long list of duties in the yard, and then I just thought of this meeting when I saw the list, and I appreciate this because I've been able to sit here and look outside and enjoy the day today.
We're willing to accommodate any way we can.
Mr. Chairman, if you follow the schedule, everybody will have time to go home and level.
Yes, I have several things I would like to comment on, and maybe just a little bit of my background so that you're aware of that. I have chaired two watershed committees, the Yamhill Watershed Committee and the Rick Rial Watershed Committee, the Yamhill for 4 years and the Rick Rial for 2 years. The way those two communicate, I talk to myself between the meetings, so that works fairly well. I got started in watersheds back when we wrote the bill that created the watersheds. I was involved in that process. I represented Associated Oregon Counties at that time. And we had already started working within a watershed in our county before the bill was written. We saw the importance. And we've been funding the operations of both watersheds partially ever since that time. We've contributed funds to the Yamhill watershed and contributed funds and staff to the Rick Rial watershed. So we've been very involved in not only participating on the boards, but also the staffing of them. The Yamhill watershed, the way we fund that, or the way we operate that, is through Soil and Water Conservation District. The staff is hired through Soil and Water Conservation District and managed by the watershed, and it's a very good working partnership. I think that working through an existing organization that we already have throughout this state, such as the Soil and Water Conservation Districts that are already set up, makes a lot of sense to funnel monies and work through that for staffing because the process is there. And we've done it both ways, and I have found that's probably the easiest way. One of the other things that I do want to touch on, I have had an opportunity to review what the resource group has turned in, and don't have any problem with what they've turned in. Matter of fact, it makes a lot of sense to me. Now, being one of the watersheds that didn't get the additional influx of monies, the Southern Coast Watershed and the Grand Round Watershed, got started with $10 million, so they were able to set up, get running, and have things going that the rest of the watersheds around the state didn't have. So there may be a difference of how we feel about this bill based on how we started, and that may be why we're looking at this somewhat different. But I see what the resource group came up with as an advantage to those of us that didn't start that way. The other thing that I would like to talk about is, once again, the county representative on the watershed group. In the information that was turned into you today by the resource group, the at-large position, I feel, could be a county position because we do represent a large body. I mean, we're elected from the general public. We're elected by everybody in the county. There were some people in the back of the room that said, well, maybe you could just make that a large commissioner position. I'm not sure what they were talking about when they said that.
You are Mike Winters, I guess.
Yeah, so in that draft, I think there's some opportunity there to do that. In the Dash 2 amendments, the urban resident one, I think that could also be changed to the commissioner one because we're representing both those the community. So I think in either draft, but my preference looking everything over, although I do believe it does need some more work, is the one that was turned in today, I think, brings in more of the things that I have heard as concerns that has come up over the period of time. So I think at some point in time, you're going to have plenty of information to work with, and I wish you luck on pulling it together, because I think there's some good ideas there.
Thank you, Matt. Maybe that's part of our problem today. We've got, if you can see the desk, we've got piles of information here, and if you go to our offices, we even more. That's any Cruz?
Yeah, thanks. You know, I ask this, Mike, because you come at this from a very unique perspective of having been a player on a whole bunch of different sides here, and kind of to get to one of the things Representative Messley referenced earlier, and something I've observed, I guess I just want to see if you would be able to confirm this. When we talk about areas where things work well, where we have watershed councils and soil districts and other people in a coordinated effort, it's also appeared to me that in those counties, county government has been interested and involved also. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think that's a real key for this working together as one of the partnerships. In both of the watersheds I work in, the partners that really have pulled it together has been the county soil and water conservation district, and then the two of them working together put the watershed committees together. And we would have had a tough time doing it without watershed or without soil and water conservation, I think vice versa. And then once the watershed council is together, I think you need to continue that partnership.
Just a follow-up, Mr. Chair. I think it does speak to you to the point of county involvement in this, and I think the fact that that is absolutely essential for the local groups to be able to function properly is to have that level of government committed also to this process.
I think that's a great point. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Burley? And Ken, I want you to look at this. Your name was crossed off. Oh.
Representing Messley, Senator Farioli, committee members, for the record, my name is Ken Beerley, program manager with the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board. By your invitation, I'm obviously not universally loved. would like to raise, since things are crystal clear here, I'd like to raise another issue, one that I think is important, and one that I believe is needs to be kept in mind as you're deliberating the restructuring of the current delivery mechanism for assistance to local watershed groups, soil and water conservation districts. That issue is that as we look at reconstituting a board and find a mechanism in which the grant decisions are made under a new board, one of the things that we need to have in consideration is we are currently, the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board received some 216 grant applications requesting about $14.5 million in February. We had about $500,000, a little less than $500,000 to distribute for the remainder of this biennium. However, we have many more good projects that could be funded and could be implemented as early as a new budget is available in first of the biennium. Traditionally, when the GWEB board made grant award decisions in May or June to develop grant agreements after the new budget is in place, with a change of the biennium every other year. So as you are putting together a new mechanism, particularly with a governor's appointment Senate approval process, there is a possibility of having a hiatus of distribution of funds for a significant period of time. There is the potential of losing implementation for this year, and I think that it would have a particularly significant effect upon delivery of resources in an effective way. So I think there are opportunities to keep this in mind in drafting
our recommendation would be to allow the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board to make funding decisions for the start of the biennium, and as a new board is identified or developed by your legislative body, we use that for future grant cycles. But there is a possibility of interrupting projects having a significant hiatus in decision making, and would like to at least have you keep that in mind as you're looking at changes. One other thing I would like to do before we all go home is to address, to make some specific clarifications of things that were about the current structure of the board. In the handout that was provided to you by the resource group, I'd like to clarify that, in fact, the non-voting members of the board under its current conditions are not any federal agencies. There are three specific federal agencies that are non-voting members. That's the Bureau of Land Management, the Forest Service, and the Natural Resource Conservation Service. Those are three identified specifically in statute that are on our board. So as it talks about current GWEB structure, it's those three agencies, not just any federal agencies. And the only state agency that is represented on our board as a non-voting member is Department of Agriculture. And the governor's office is the non-voting, is specifically in statute the non-voting chair of the board. So that's a correction to this table in the Natural Resource Working Group. The other correction,
could you state the federal agencies again, please?
Federal agencies are the Bureau of Land Management, the Forest Service, and the Natural Resource Conservation Service. And the only state agency is Department of Agriculture. The director of the Department of Agriculture is represented on our board as a non-voting member. And the governor's natural resource director is the non-voting chair of our situation. And on this table of GWEB structure, the current structure, the staffing, both current staff and requested in the budgets, need to be clarified. The fiscal person is not an audit person. He's a fiscal manager. He makes sure the payments get made to watershed councils, soil and water conservation districts, to grantees, reviews the grant applications, and maintains, basically manages the fiscal operations of the program. So it's not really an audit function per se. We only have four regional coordinators currently. The North Coast Regional Coordinator is contracted to the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association. It is not an FTE. It is a contracted position, contracted representation. We have one restoration database position and one office specialist, clerical position to keep the office in shape. So that should count up to seven people, plus a program manager. What's requested in the budget is one regional coordinator, so we would then have five regional coordinators, a specialist, the watershed assessment coordinator that would assist watershed councils around the state doing watershed assessments, an additional office specialist to assist with fiscal management, an additional information system specialist to assist with database management. So there are only four positions being requested in the 9901 budget in the option package 191, I believe it is. So that's a specific change. That the information was incorrect as it was presented by the Natural Resource Working Group.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Burley? Any other comments for the order of the day?
Any Chris, just comment on one. Right. Ken said at the beginning, I have seen crystal that was completely opaque, so.
Is there any other discussions this committee would like to make before we adjourn?
Mr. Chairman, I do have a comment, and I want to thank the group that's come together to do this work, because it was pretty intense, and I think it moves the ball forward a little bit. I think it's incumbent on us to take the information out around the watershed council loop and the other institute loops and ask them to feed into it. this process. I appreciate the concept of whether or not the committee can get its arms around this project in this legislative session. It's still my intent that we do that. I think we do have to have a mechanism that coordinates across state agencies because of, and I've repeated this several times for the committee, because we've got so many of them working in this area without coordination. And it just seems that we should get the purposes and functions coordinated and the resources. We just can't afford to keep wasting resources. I would never want to see a situation where we start playing off soil water conservation districts against watershed councils in any way. That is a certain path this whole plan to self-destruct. And I don't think we need even to discuss in any sense the relative merits of watershed councils versus soil water conservation districts. They serve different purposes and have served different purposes, and I think we'll continue to serve different purposes. I don't even want to see them in a situation where they compete for any resources. I think the challenge here is not only to do something that coordinates state agency and information and empowers decision makers to know where the money goes, but it's also important that we help define the roles that are symbiotical between watershed councils and soil water conservation districts so they work together and solve problems. You just don't want to see an institution that's existed for, what is it, 50, over 50 years for the soil water conservation districts overlooked as a key player in this restoration effort. I don't want to take the energy and the creativity and the explosive interest curve out of the watershed councils. I think that would be a foolish disconnect. If we do that, we're going to make a lot of folks disaffected with this process and disaffected with government, and I'm afraid if they walk away from the process, we'll never get them back. So it's going to be, it's just another one of the challenges, but there has to be some mechanism for reconciling how these community organizations work together and support each other. If we don't find a mechanism for those expressions, then we're essentially going to pit these organizations against each other, and that is not going to help fish or watershed bodies. So I was glad to hear that there's a mechanism that's produced this, perhaps a step closer to an ultimate product. And I just think it's extraordinary that people will work this hard. And I'm glad to be able to take this out, and I think it's our responsibility to send it to watershed councils and solicit input from them, environmental groups, people that are not here at the table and not represented, and through the next week get it out to as many people as we possibly can and then pull the information back into the process again and see where it takes us. And we, at some point in time, we have to look at a go or no-go threshold. We've already heard that to be legal, we just have to create the fund and designate the agency. That is a relatively, that's a two-paragraph, simple regulating clause bill. To do what we're trying to do here, which is get some coordination and get some empowerment and clarify some roles and do some definitions, is a bigger job, but it's a better product, a much better product, that I think will get us a lot further down the road. I think it's worth doing. So let's sort of put it in perspective from my viewpoint. I think we're on the right track. I wish we'd have gotten here in the second week of the legislative session. But here we are, and we think we're kind of in the middle. Senator Gordley and I are going to practice Christmas together so that if we're here in December, at least we'll be ready to go. Thank you.
Hopefully we resolve this for that. I'd also like to state my appreciation for all the work that not only the Natural Resources Group, but the rest of you and other counties have been talking and working together. The cities have been working on this. Watershed councils, I'm sure, although maybe you're not an organized group, I'm sure there's been a lot of phone calls, and appreciate the fact that you folks have made the trip in today. But I don't want to close this meeting now without acknowledging Judith Callens, who has been working. I heard her, overheard her say, till 11 o'clock last night, and was out here again at 6 o'clock this morning, trying to get this information together for us, and for this, I do appreciate that. We all appreciate that.
and the budget didn't show up.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Well, what's up with that?
And to that, I know we just had an awful lot of staff output, but what I really want to say is that we as a committee, as well as everyone else that's involved, really need to focus in and try to pull this thing together right now. And that's going to take an awful lot of work on all of our parts, just to wade through all this information and try to pick out the pieces that we think will work and that we can accomplish this session, and maybe put some of it into interim-type work that can be worked on in preparation for next session. It's a huge task, and I just think we all need to make a special, strong focus at this time. That's any Chris?
Sir, thank you, and I appreciate your words. I just missed outside on this beautiful day. I noticed the sun is completely gone, so it must be time to adjourn.
And our next meeting is 7 o'clock Monday morning.
Be there.
Again, thank you all. Adjourn.